Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from October 3rd, 1996.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, as the case may be, across all these many, many time zones, from the Hawaiian and Tahitian Islands racing eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south to South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. Top of the morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and as promised this morning, in a moment, the executive producer of Dark Skies, Bryce Zabel, is going to be here. So stand by for that coming up in just a moment. I know a lot of you have questions about Dark Skies and interest in it. And speaking, by the way, of dark skies, not so dark, just a short time ago, I'll read you a story. Something has gone across the northeastern sky, a scene just about everywhere. I'm getting faxes and email. We'll talk about it in a second. Good lead-in, actually, for Bryce. As a lead, I guess, into what we're going to talk about, this is an Associated Press story sent to me by one of my affiliates, and I thank them for that. I wish I could remember which one, and I would thank them by call letters. People, it just came in before the beginning of the show, people from Los Angeles to San Francisco, and I would add to New Mexico, have reported seeing a mysterious green flash streak across the northeastern sky. Authorities say they don't know what it is. Frank Donnell, a spokesman for NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, says he doesn't have any information on what it is. But he says if it was that high up, it probably was a meteor or a re-entering satellite. And there's a period after that. They could have had another or. I'm sure it's a meteor. The FAA said they've received many reports of the flash from as far away as San Francisco. Said he also had no idea what it is, but it was certainly too high to be an airplane. Here's another one. Hey, Art, something out here in California hit the ground. They tracked the object over a few counties near Yosemite and the Central Valley. It hit here in Mariposa, we think, on a ranch. A close family friend said this. He manages the ranch, said the object lit the sky to almost daytime, and he thought for a second that a beam of light hit the car. So we may have something down on a ranch in California, in the Mariposa area. My, my, my. Look out for pods out there. All right, now, for quite a period of time, NBC advertised Dark Skies with us because, of course, of a lot of the material that we have here on the air. And I so much wanted to have Bryce Zabel on during that period, but I thought, no, the audience is going to buy this as a infomercial or something, and I didn't want to do that. So I waited until the advertising, which ran its course, prior to the and just after the pilot, until it ran its course. And now I feel very comfortable in doing it because a lot of you who heard the advertising, zillions of you, have many questions. And so here is the guy who is the executive producer of Dark Skies who will answer your questions. And I'm going to let him tell us a little bit about himself. Bryce, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Art. I feel like my entire career has been a warm-up for appearing on your show here.
No. I'm sure that... what's it like, by the way, to give birth to a television series like that? I bet there's a lot of nail-biting and wondering. What was it like?
Well, you know it is. Any TV series is hard to get on the air these days. It's incredibly difficult. There's a lot of hoops to jump through. And with the material that we've got here, you can imagine there were a lot of extra added attractions to, you know, conspiring to keep us from getting on the air.
Oh, yes.
And so it's been quite an interesting run. I'm sure we'll end up talking a little bit about that tonight.
Okay. Well, I don't give me names, but I mean, what kind of static did you take?
Well, mostly it's the concept that to get on the air these days, you know, you have to have something that someone can look at and go, well, that ought to work. And despite the success of the X-Files, I don't think that people would necessarily say, well, you know, a UFO show should just work on its own. I think we had to prove to NBC and that we had a show that had legs. So when I say the resistance, I mean we've had a remarkably good run, but I mean, once you take this kind of material and you float it out there, then a lot of people want to give you their comments, and the, you know, the hardest thing in any television series is to maintain a consistent vision of any kind. So that's been our biggest struggle, I think.
All right. If there is a vision, that vision thing that Bob Dole has so much trouble about, with respect to dark skies,
right.
What is the vision?
Well, our vision was simply to, my co-creator on Dark Skies is Brent Friedman, and I met Brent in, I think it was late 1994, and we started kicking around UFO ideas. He had some pretty interesting true stories to tell me, and I'd done a lot of reading, and we started, you know, talking about what we knew, and the paradigm shift that we call that goes with Dark Skies was simply that instead of doing a science fiction show that might take place in the present or the future, near or far future, we would set it in the past. And once we made the decision to go back to the 60s to start our series, I think that was, you know, really what the vision was all about. And then we kind of expanded from there to say, let's try to do a TV series that's all about the unification theory of UFO. You can call it mythology or theology or actuality, whatever you want, but try to make sense of crop circles and animal mutilations and sky sightings and abductions and try to come up with one theory that would tie it all together.
So it is going to deal with all of those things. Well, it's already really dealt with crop circles.
Well, I think we planted a lot of seeds in our pilot and our first episode, and you know, hopefully that we'll have a very long run on NBC, in which case we'll have time to harvest a lot of those concepts. Obviously, with crop circles, we probably raised more questions about what the crop circle was really about than we answered. But on the other hand, it sure made for a very, I don't think I've seen a crop circle on a television series, and maybe not even in a film yet.
Actually, I think you're right, Bryce. Hold on one second. I want to remind the audience of something. We're going to get into a lot of interesting areas, obviously, here. And what I would like to do is tell you all that right now, on America Online, in the Periscope area, it's called Periscope, my wife is presently sort of hosting a little get-together of people with regard to questions on Dark Skies. And if you have questions, that is one more avenue where you can broach them. So to get into that chat room, simply go on to America Online, enter keyword Art Bell, and it'll take you to the Periscope area, or enter a keyword Periscope. That'll take you there. When you get there, go into the Grassy Knoll chat room. And if you have a question for Bryce or something about Dark Skies, pose it there, and she will take the best or the cream of the crop and bring them in here. Bryce, research.
Sure.
There must have been a lot of research. No matter what you ended up doing dramatically or with dramatic license, you had to start out with a base of what you thought reality was.
Sure, although I am sure that a lot of your listeners tonight are going to call in and want to discuss what they see as inconsistencies or incorrect takes on things. I welcome that. I mean, it's like any TV series. That's the thing that differentiates a TV series, I guess, from a film, is that just because you put an episode on doesn't mean it's not a work in progress. So we'll be able to, you know, learn and continue to learn. But in answer to your question about what kind of research went into it, I've been reading on this subject for a number of years, like I'm sure most of your viewers or your listeners have been doing, and Brent has certainly been interested in it as well. So we started with a base. I've got a fairly large library of UFO materials and so forth. And then, of course, we kind of dipped our toe in some of the stuff that you were finding on the internet. And I have to admit, the more you read, the more you realize you might as well just take your own crack at what you think might work, because there's so many theories and counter theories out there that almost anything you do is mutually inconsistent with some other theory.
Was it an avocation for you before a vocation?
Well, it was an interest, and I just happen to think it's a very dramatic area to work in. Also, for myself, I happen to believe in the reality of the UFO phenomenon, which not a lot of people that I've run into necessarily share my beliefs. Certainly among a lot of the people that we've had to take the series out to and discuss it with, a lot of them see it simply as a dramatic creation with, no bearing in reality. So, Brent and I keep our own opinions, closely held and try to make an entertaining show, and everybody seems to be happy.
What's your background?
Well, I started in radio in Eugene, Oregon, about 20 years ago.
Oh, my.
And I kind of got into that TV journalism thing, did local news in Oregon and Arizona. And I came to Los Angeles back in 1980 as the first CNN correspondent.
No kidding.
Yeah, that was kind of a kick, because at the time I gave up an anchor job in Arizona where it was kind of an insecure thing to give it all up and move to L.A. for this CNN, which nobody even knew what it stood for. They called us the Chicken Noodle Network when we first got here.
That's right.
But all of us who started at CNN believed in the concept. We thought that if television could really be that global force, that maybe we could, help make things better. And I think that in retrospect, it looks like CNN's turned out to be a pretty good bet.
Oh, it certainly has.
Yeah. So, the journalism was my first foray into having to write, for television, writing words and pictures together to match. About 10 years ago, my wife suggested I give screenwriting a try, and I'd never even seen a screenplay at the time. I got a couple of them and said, this looks okay. You don't have to know that many adjectives and adverbs to write a screenplay. So I gave it a shot, and the first two scripts I wrote became TV series, which is incredibly fortuitous and lucky. But
so you're going to encourage a million people to give it all up and go to Hollywood. And that just doesn't happen, does it?
No, it really doesn't. And I think it's very unusual. And I certainly have had a hard time. I thought at the time, well, this is pretty cool. You just write a script and they make a TV series out of it and they send you residual checks. But
yes.
I was disabused of that over the years. So I'm, for example, getting Dark Skies on at the quality level that it's at right now is really a dream for me. It's
when terrific. You guys walked in the door at NBC and they said, okay, what have you got? And you said, well, we've got this thing on UFOs.
Sure.
What kind of reception did you
well,
get?
Well, I got to tell you, that's kind of normally how you might sell a TV series, but everything about getting Dark Skies on the air has been a little different than what normally is the procedure. For example, when Brent and I decided to do this, one of my greatest concerns was that if we just simply went in and pitched kind of a cool UFO story, somebody could dismiss it by saying, well, that's really a terrific story, but you can never come up with 5 years' worth of stories for it.
Uh-huh.
So Brent and I decided to work very hard to answer that objection. So we literally arced out 5 seasons worth of stories, wrote a timeline that went from 75 million BC to the year 2008, and packaged it all up in this ultra-classified briefing book. So by the time we actually, and of course we sent that around to, Jeff Sagansky at Sony picked up on it right away. And by the time we got to the various networks, we knew we had a pretty hot property.
Wait a minute, five seasons in one book?
Well, not episode by episode and beat by beat, but in the general
the chronology.
Yeah, the chronology was pretty strong because Beneath Dark Skies is also a very, I think, unusual concept, which is that we plan to let our characters grow old and we plan to let the series move forward. So we're starting in the 60s, but our intention is by New Year's Eve 1999 to have caught up with New Year's Eve 1999 in real time.
Wow.
Yeah, which
that is a neat idea.
Well, it's challenging, and it's certainly my intention to do it now, and let's knock on wood and hope that NBC will allow us to grow these characters.
That's an intriguing idea. So is it going to be linear in time, or will it take jumps?
It it's not quantum leap. We're not jumping around within our time frame. We feel like what we owe the audience is a reveal, and to jump around would be to have characters knowing things at some time that they, you know, they didn't know before, and it would, I don't think it would be as fun for the audience to watch, because I think the audience wants to figure out this big mystery about what's really going on at the same time our characters do. So our intention is chronology.
All right. Did you receive any hostility from our government or from the Air Force or from the Navy or anybody else involved? Any serious hostility about doing this?
No one has officially called us up, if you mean, you know, on the phone and said, you know, knock this stuff off.
Right.
Now that we're on the air, we are starting to get more attention, and Brent and I have had a few situations happen where we're not quite sure whether we're being scammed or whether we're being approached, and I think you would have to vote on the side of skepticism in those types of contacts. But let's just put it this way. Our profile is rising, and with the rising profile comes some of that stuff. I've heard the Navy is not happy with the Navy being named, but I don't know that that's true.
Well, U.S. Naval Intelligence, in fact, was very much involved. And so I could understand that perhaps they might be a little nervous about it.
Sure.
Listen, I interviewed Dr. Jesse Marcel, Jr.
I saw that this week, didn't you?
Last week.
Last week.
And somebody on the Internet's wondering whether you went and talked to Dr. Marcel or even Jesse Marcel before his death and in getting any approval for the series or any help.
I wish the answer is no. I didn't talk to either of those people. I wish that I had been able to talk to Jesse Marcel before his death. There's lots of material out about what Jesse Marcel's story was, and I've certainly read accounts of what his son has had to say. And of course, in Dark Skies, we go one step beyond even what perhaps the theories or the accounts hold. So we came up with our own interpretation of Roswell that was even, you know, more strikingly different than what the account currently is.
Indeed. I've got to ask this.
Sure.
You remember back to Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Absolutely.
And the warm, fuzzy little alien.
You bet.
Well, that's what was done for years, and you guys don't have warm, fuzzy little aliens at all.
We don't think they're warm and fuzzy.
That's a good answer.
We reject the notion of the benevolent space brothers. I think that you're certainly accurate. I mean, when Close Encounters came out, I remember a common conversation had by people after they came out of that movie was, boy, you know, if they would just land in my backyard, I'd get on and go away with them.
That's right.
Like Roy Neary did in the movie. And our feeling, our kind of motto at Dark Skies is don't get on the ship, because we just don't think it's where you want to be. And we base this on the literature that's in the movement right now that would imply to me anyway that if whatever the reality of what's going on, it would seem that these visitors or whatever we want to call them are at the very least supremely indifferent to what we're up to. So we think that prudence would indicate that you treat them with a certain amount of hands-off status.
Well, you said you believe they are not friendly little guys.
Sure.
Based on?
Well, when I say I believe, I don't know that they're, Dark Skies takes its own interpretation, and we'll, I'm sure, get into it later tonight about, you know, my feeling about Dark Skies being entertainment first. I'm not personally sure whether this interaction is of a completely hostile nature, but I don't think that it's of a benevolent bringing us into the cosmic universe kind of nature either. So that's really where I come down on a personal level.
All right. Hang tight. We are
sure.
At the bottom of the hour. We'll take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to replay, free shot on this one, the Dark Skies commercial, and then ask you a little bit about it. How's that?
Terrific. Thanks.
All right. Stay right where you are. From the high desert on a night when green things are streaking through the high atmosphere above the West Coast, we'll be right back with Bryce.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
All right, once again, here I am. Man, what a night. You wouldn't believe what's going on down here. My guest is Bryce Abel, and it could not have been timed better for Bryce in a lot of ways. By the way, in the shameless plug file, thank you very much. News Talk 780 KOH Reno for a first wire report on this object seen by millions across the West. And I'm going to read you something that I have no, absolutely no confirmation of. We're trying to confirm it right now. And this may well be total bull. But we have had a few indications that something has hit the ground. And I'll just read you this. This may be total bull. But I do have a return number, and we're trying to get through. So if Jason, if you're out there, unbusy your phone so we can get through. He sent this as something he got from Edwards Air Force Base in California. Tonight, 3 October, 96, at about 2015 hours, Edwards Air Force Base personnel witnessed a strange green flash in the northeastern section of the sky about 25 miles from Edwards Air Force Base. Interceptors, it says, were dispatched from Edwards as well as Nellis in Nevada to that section of the state. On arrival, four pilots in F-16C aircraft saw several glowing objects on the ground. The pilots took up station around this area and proceeded to shadow it. Approximately 10 minutes later, said glowing objects left the ground at an alarming rate and moved vertically through the formation of planes and disappeared both visually and on radar in a matter of moments. An investigation is pending, more news to follow, per release from the commanding officer at Edwards Air Force Base, California. Now, this could be absolute poppycock, something somebody put together very quickly to take advantage of the reports that are real of something that has streaked across the western sky and has been seen by millions. In a moment, back to Bryce Abel, executive producer of Dark Skies. Good news for such an interview, I would say. Back now to Bryce Abel. Interesting developments, eh, Bryce?
It certainly is. I'm certainly curious, although I have to ask you, who do you think this Jason character is?
Well, I don't know. We're trying very hard to find out right now, and I can't confirm anything he just said. What I can confirm, though, is that this object did streak across the sky, as you heard. There's Associated Press reports and the rest of it. So,
Did his press release come on official stationery?
No.
You know, the thing that made me wonder about it is describing that it left at an alarming rate. If written by a journalist, that's kind of a loaded word, alarming rate. It's alarming to whom?
Well, it would be the kind of thing you'd write.
Yeah.
Alarming rate. Yeah. All right, Bryce, stand by, because here is what we ran for so long here on the network. Actually, I think it was about a three-week run in advertising the beginning of Dark Skies. Listen.
Okay, you want to know the truth, not the lies the government's been feeding us. I know this is going to sound crazy, but look, I've said too much. Who knows who's listening in? We need to talk. All right, we're on a secured line. Now, 50 years ago, a UFO crashed in the desert in New Mexico. And since that day, every major moment in human history has been, well, influenced. It sounds crazy. Look around you. They're walking among us everywhere. Call them aliens. Call them anything you like. Just don't ignore this warning. On Saturday, September 21st, NBC will expose the world to the truth with its new series, Dark Skies. I know you think it's just a TV show, but it's the only way to get the word out. The government's tried to suppress this, but on Saturday, September 21st, NBC opens this top-secret file on Dark Skies. It's the truth, disguised as a television program. Okay, that's Dark Skies, Saturday, September 21st, NBC. Oh, yeah, there's one more thing. Hey, I thought this was a secure...
Alarming, Bryce?
You know, I have to tell you, NBC put out a press release about 3 weeks ago saying that the amount of promo they had put behind Dark Skies was the most they put behind any new series in network history, and I think that's pretty well demonstrated.
I would say so. All right, in there it says The Truth, disguised as a TV show.
Sure.
Should they have said that?
Well, you know, look, I can't do a 5-year series about and make it dramatically viable for everyone at networks and studios and so forth and make it just the truth. And besides which, what is the truth? I mean, I think you do an entire show every night trying to figure out what exactly the truth is.
That is so, yes.
So my feeling, here's what, you know, I think it's a good time to stop down and explain what it is that we feel, those of us who are working as the creative team on the show, as a promotional venue, saying that here comes the truth is a pretty smart idea to get people to the party, and I don't control the NBC publicity machine, as you can well imagine. Here's what my position has always been. We're doing an entertainment show. We're trying to entertain people, and the topic is unidentified flying objects. It's an alien interaction with humanity. Now, do I believe that there is some truth buried in that? Absolutely, I do. I believe that Roswell was some kind of event that has yet to be explained officially? Absolutely, I do.
You bet.
So I think there's a lot of core truth to some of the things we'll talk about, but am I going to argue that the Ed Sullivan broadcast that the Beatles were on was actually messed with? Probably not. Even though I will in an episode in about 3 weeks.
Oh, you will?
Yes.
Can you... You probably really don't want to tell us now. By the way, Bryce, are you a baseball fan?
I'm not anymore because, as it turns out, we've just been preempted for 2 weeks by baseball playoffs.
I know.
And then when we come back, we're against the first game of the World Series.
Oh, man.
And after that, we'll be against game 6 of the World Series.
Oh, good luck.
So, even if I was a big baseball fan, I'd have to change now, I guess.
Well, I'm going to tell you what to hope for. I, too, am not a big baseball fan, though I'm on many stations at, for example, KBC in Los Angeles, carry the Dodgers, so they
sure.
probably don't want to hear this. But you know, it preempts me from time to time, and frankly, I'm hoping the umps go out on strike and stay out, ending the season forever. Anyway, so you'll be back in 2 weeks. I don't suppose you want to tell us anything about what is coming.
Oh, I'd love to tell you about all kinds of things that are coming. I a long time ago, had this conversation with Brent when we were talking about, you know, if we, in success, would our timeline end up posted on the Internet, and would we have to be very careful about, you know, whether our scripts would be posted and things like that. And we decided there were only two tactics you could take. You could either try to keep a lid on something,
right,
which maybe you could never keep a lid on, or you could be a little more open about it and let the people who don't want to know some of the things that are coming tune out. So we've taken the attitude that unlike some shows and movies that number their scripts and try to keep them from getting out because I guess they're paranoid. We have enough paranoia in our show that we don't need to have it in our lives as well.
All right.
So I'll be happy to talk about anything that's coming up.
All right. We did get a fax from the guy who sent this, said it was a joke. Ha, ha, ha. Not funny. So.
Not funny.
Yeah, no, that's right. Not in the middle of all this, but indeed.
But you know what he's done, though, is he's actually provided a real-world lesson in just what we're up against here that I'm sure you face every day of your life, which is how do you separate the wheat from the chaff here?
That's right.
How do you decide who's leveling with you, and how do you decide who's scamming you? Because the scams are better than ever, and there's a lot of information out there that people can read up on and then regurgitate in their own scam. And so I find it a very confusing field. I'm not telling anybody anything new by saying that, but I find it a very confusing field to really get your arms around the truth.
Well, as you know better than anybody, we live in a digital world, and photographs, even video, can be tampered with exquisitely.
Well, in fact, we've just done it. If you watched last week's episode, we put one of the majestic cloakers, Jim Steele, standing behind Lee Harvey Oswald when he was shot.
Morphed in there.
Yes.
Very good job of morphing, I might say.
Yeah, and in fact, just to show you the kind of fun we're going to have in a later episode, Lungard is actually going to testify before the Warren Commission, and some of the tape that he believes to be true will actually have been doctored And, of course, in 1964, the Warren Commission is going to say, well, you can't alter videotape, Mr. Lonegard.
I see.
So, you know, we intend to have some fun with all this as well.
How did you pick the character for Lonegard?
Well, John Lonegard is the name of a character that I've been playing around with putting in a UFO series since 1991. I originally thought of him as John Lonegard, L-O-N-E, and then G-U-A-R-D.
Lonegard. Lonegard, I've got it.
Single sentry, protecting the truth and all that kind of thing. And then I did kind of a scrambling of the letters to make it John Lonegard. And when Brent and I began to develop Dark Skies, I kind of brought John Lonegard out of retirement and gave him the lead role there.
All right. Here's the facts. I want to say I love Dark Skies. Think it's the best thing I've seen on TV for years. Was wondering how much of the show is based in fact. Also, where did you come up with the idea for the ganglion? I follow UFO reports. I'm an amateur ufologist.
Right.
I found it absolutely fascinating. Was blown away by the idea of parasites controlling the greys.
Well, that is the you know, for everyone who says, well, that's the same old thing, seen it before, I don't think anyone has actually said that the ganglion, which is controlling the greys, is now seeping into the human population, which I think is at least a pretty provocative new idea in the whole thing. You know, we can talk about the ganglions, you know, later. What was the first part of that question on the facts?
How much of the show is based on
fact? How much of it is based on fact? Well, it depends, and it goes, you know, is the real answer, and it goes episode by episode. I think if you watch, for example, the pilot, you'll notice that, for example, Betty and Barney Hill are interviewed in the pilot
right.
by John Lonegard.
Right.
Did John Lonegard ever actually, was there a John Lonegard who interviewed Betty and Barney Hill? Unlikely. Were Betty and Barney Hill an interracial couple that lived in New Hampshire?
Oh, yes.
Exactly, they were, and that's how we portrayed them. The story that Betty told and Barney told as to what happened to them that night up near Portsmouth, in the White Mountains, actually, in New Hampshire, that story is lifted from, you know, their actual descriptions of what happened to them. So depending on what particular thing we're talking about, there's a lot of fact in there. Also, when it comes to history, to answer your listener's question, one of the things we want to do with history is insofar as it is possible to stay true to things that we all know how they really went down, we want to not contradict those things, and we want the Dark Skies interpretation to be the thing that sneaks in the cracks or comes in the back door.
Well, there will be those who will charge your muddying the waters, disinformation, taking a seed of truth and building a
sure.
Mountain of disinformation that's going to do damage to ufology.
Well, I don't know that anybody can go do damage to ufology at this point. And you know, I think that the whole business has to kind of pull itself up by the bootstraps, and there are some people out there really trying to do it. You know, although it is interesting because I have been asked by people, well, are you worried that if you actually go forward with this show that, you know, someone will try to shut you down or you
sure.
feel threatened in any way?
Sure.
And my feeling, and although this could change because, you know, we're just getting started, I don't know how things are going to shake down, but my feeling has always been that to the people that are actually in charge of this cover-up, they probably look at Dark Skies and say, well, you know, it's just more adding to the mix, and for every person it causes to get riled, it'll confuse somebody else. So I suppose there is that that element to the whole thing. On the other hand, I think that any program that can gain a wide audience, or at least a very significant audience, and that challenges them to think about what really might be going on and to discuss at the water cooler at work on Monday when they come back to work the ideas and concepts floated in, say, Dark Skies,
sure.
I think that's all to the good. I'm happy to be doing that.
What made you decide to begin with Roswell? Just an obvious starting point?
For both Brent and I, we looked at the sort of the situation and said that Roswell was pretty much the Rosetta Stone of the whole UFO movement.
Indeed.
And we happen to also believe that it's a factual event. So our take was, if that really happened, then all kinds of other things have happened that maybe you didn't exactly hear the truth about as they would have you believe it. We decided to start in the 60s, though, as opposed to right after Roswell, simply because we felt that, we did that for two reasons. One, that we felt the 60s represent a time when UFOs kind of got a little more respect. We stopped talking about flying saucers and we started talking about unidentified flying objects.
Sure.
We stopped talking about little green men and we started talking about extraterrestrials.
Little gray men, actually.
Yeah, they're not green, they're gray. And then the other thing for the 60s, it was just one of the more colorful, it is the most colorful time frame of recent American history. So that's why we picked all that. Although your question goes to the nature of Roswell, which we did make a very big deal about in our first standalone episode called Moving Targets that aired last Saturday.
Mm-hmm. What about the president who was seen in the second episode? Is there any basis in fact
On the fact that the president
Truman,
didn't know?
Well, no, that Truman...
You're talking about Truman now.
Yes, uh-huh.
On the Roswell situation, what we tried to do, just for those people who are listening that may not have seen the episode, what we did in our first full episode is we went back to Roswell, and level one of Roswell may very well be that a weather balloon crashed there, and level two of Roswell may very well be that a UFO crashed there and they covered it up. Well, the dark skies level is level three, where we said that they had arranged a contact meeting, that Harry Truman was there.
That's right.
That they came and presented us with what amounted to a surrender ultimatum, and that we shot at them and took a chunk out of it, and that's why it dropped into the New Mexico desert. So your question is, do I have any basis to allege that Harry Truman was at Roswell?
That's right.
Not particularly, no.
Well, that's all right. You're being good and honest with us.
And again, this goes to the heart of why I think there's been some misunderstandings, and partly because of the promotional campaign. I think there are some people that are saying, well, you know, doggone it, that muddies the waters, because that's not what we believe the historical record about Roswell really suggests. And to those people, I say, I understand that. I've read the same materials that you've read. Our intent is to not only send up American history by giving alternative interpretations, but also to throw some change-ups out there in the field of UFOs. And the concept here is, again, there may be core truth to a lot of what we're talking about, but what the series is about is an alternative history, which is a dramatic genre of its own kind, and that I think that we're being fairly faithful to the rules of alternative history.
The most successful series, Star Trek, a good example,
yes,
evolved, and I was a big Trekkie, I don't think I missed one of them, evolved and changed.
Sure.
And do you anticipate that for Dark Skies?
Having to evolve as a series?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, evolution of Dark Skies is built into the series concept. I think that may... Well, let me put it this way, Art. Every single TV series that's ever existed has to evolve, and we had evolved and will evolve.
Right.
All series have to evolve because you keep doing it every week, and that's a lot of material that you've got to fill, and you've got to let things happen, and then actors come and go. They get older. Evolution is natural. A lot of times, though, people fight the evolution. They fight the changes. What Dark Skies has done instead is we have created a framework where growth of characters, evolution of concept is built into it. And I got to tell you, there may be some people out there, you know, who are saying, well, you know, listen, this isn't the way it is. I'm not interested, or I'm not buying into the story as you're currently telling it. All I can say to everybody who's listening is just stay tuned. There are going to be change-ups just as we shifted the paradigm to go back into the past. We reserve the right to shift the paradigm at any moment to create the most intriguing, interesting series that we can possibly do.
Well, I'll tell you why I enjoyed it. Because I understood, really, from the beginning that it was going to be entertainment. And so I sat down, and I certainly was entertained. As a matter of fact, you remember Alien?
Sure.
Of course. And I assume that the ganglion scene with the ganglion coming out of that guy's brain must have come to some degree from that, because it did to my stomach exactly the same thing, maybe even more, out of the head. Oh, man.
Well, the ganglion, there's a couple of things about the ganglion. First of all, the ganglion is as much a metaphor as a real you know, real thing. In other words, look, there are some people who say, well, there aren't, I think one of your questions earlier was
looked real to me.
What's that?
I said it looked real to me.
Well, Todd Masters does our special effects, the creature effects, and he's a pro, and he really delivered the goods on that thing.
Well, it was more than metaphorical, something coming out of this guy's head.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. Geez. I mean, what we've done in the series is make it very real and very physical. There are other people who say, you know, really what's going on is some form of mind control or whatever. Now, my feeling to my answer to those people would be, well, then go ahead and enjoy Dark Skies and look at the ganglion as the metaphor for mind control, if that's what you want to believe.
I see. All right. Hold on, Bryce. We're going to come back and let you face your viewers.
I'm hanging in.
All right, good. Bryce Zabel is my guest. He is the executive producer of Dark Skies, and when we come back, you can try and pull the ganglion from his head.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 3rd of October, 1996.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. Bryce Zabel is my guest. He's executive producer of Dark Skies. And he's about to face his viewers. Wonder if that's something he's always wanted to do. We'll ask him in a moment. I want to deal with a little real news that is going on. This from the Associated Press, thanks to KOH. Thank you, guys. People from L.A. to San Francisco, and I'm about to correct that, have reported seeing a mysterious green flash all across the sky. Authorities say they have no idea what it is. Others think it's a meteor. Frank Donnell, a spokesman for NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, says he has no information on what it is. But he says if it was that high up, it probably was a meteor or a re-entering satellite. The FAA says they received many reports of the flash from as far away as San Francisco. They must not have quite the network we do. I just got a call from Fairbanks, Alaska. They saw it there. And then I got one other item. Hey, Art, something out here in California hit the ground. The tracked object came over a few counties near Yosemite and the Central Valley. It hit here in Mariposa, we believe, on a ranch. A close family friend says this. He manages that ranch, said the object hit lit the sky almost to daylight, and he thought for a second that a beam of light hit the car. We are getting reports, and as I just said, I had a call from Fairbanks. They saw it there. It's everywhere. So back to Bryce Zabel as we track this real bright object in a dark sky, and we will talk more about dark skies, have lots of good questions, and back to it in a moment. Back to Bryce Zabel. Bryce, are you there?
I am. I wish I had one of your phones. I'd be out in the backyard looking for this green thing.
I guess this is very real indeed, and they have understated the area that it was seen. I mean, if it was seen in Fairbanks, my.
Now, you know what's interesting about this is we have what probably is a meteorite out there flying around, and yet we've been sensitized to being suspicious of official pronouncements or anything these days, and a lot of us are willing to believe almost anything about this report, and we just don't even know right now.
Well, Bryce, you remember what you began with in this series, Roswell?
Absolutely.
I bet a lot of people thought that was a meteor.
That's very exactly true. And so what we've come to where, you know, people just don't know what to believe.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I guess that means the power has to go to the people. We have to figure out what to believe.
In your series, you have something called the alien removal technique?
The alien rejection technique.
Rejection
the ART.
Technique. ART, yes.
And then, of course, people that practice it in the future will become known as artists.
Really? You guys weren't listening to my program, were you, Bryce?
No.
Okay. The Face on Mars, Bryce, will you deal with things like that?
Yeah, I love The Face on Mars. I wrote a feature film about The Face on Mars called The Face 10 years ago, and Joel Silver, who you probably remember from Lethal Weapon pictures and all that, was going to produce it. And along came detente and kind of messed up the movie because it was about a race between the Russians and the Americans to get there and find out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, I'm very interested in tying into the dark skies scheme of things, and you will be seeing something about The Face on Mars at some point.
All right, let us begin to sprinkle in some calls here and see what people have to say. First time caller line, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you?
I'm in Southern California, Victorville.
Oh, all right.
Greg. And I was just curious if you had heard anything about a military installation up in Winnemucca.
If I have heard anything about it?
Yes.
To be honest with you, nothing rings a bell right now, no.
So what about Area 51? Now, I live not far from Area 51, and I would imagine as you begin to move forward in years, you're not going to be able to avoid that, are you?
Well, not only are we not going to avoid it, it's coming up in our sixth episode.
Oh, it is?
We're doing an episode called Dreamland. It takes place in Las Vegas. Howard Hughes is one of the main characters in it.
Of course. How could you not have Howard Hughes?
And we will come up with yet another alternative theory for some of what went on out there.
All right. Let's go.
In fact, are there 50 other areas before you get to Area 51? That's what we want to know.
I'd like to know the same thing. I have no idea. I know there's an S4, so it's not just the numbers, but it's letters and numbers, and it's all mixed up. I have no idea, Bryce. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call, Art.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Fayetteville, North Carolina, WFNC, 640.
All right.
Hey, Bryce, got a question for you here. Unfortunately, as you know, on the East Coast, we had a hurricane, and our affiliate for NBC is in Wilmington, North Carolina. Their transmitter went down at precisely 8 o'clock Saturday night when the premiere ran.
Coincidence?
I don't know. Nonetheless, I'm wondering, is it possible that they're going to rerun the premiere, or is there some way I can get a copy of it on videotape? And got a nice little gag for you here if you want to hear about it.
Yeah, sure. Let me answer those first. I think that they will re-air probably not only the pilot but the first episode because they're really kind of linked episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that would be one of the first things NBC would want to do is to re-air those when they can to kind of give people who missed them a chance to see them. So I think you'll get a chance to see them on the air. If you want tapes, I don't actually have anything to offer there. However, I will say the Internet has a lot of news groups that have got people who have made tapes who might help you out there.
Okay, so basically just watch trailers and that kind of thing at the end of the episodes to make sure I don't miss it and that kind of thing.
We do something in the TV business at the beginning of an episode called a saga cell, which is to sort of bring you up to date on what's happened in the series. So when you see the next episode of Dark Skies, you'll see one of those 45-second blurbs previously on Dark Skies, and they'll kind of bring you up to date. So, it's a very user-friendly show. If you miss an episode, don't feel shut out. You can always come back.
Yeah, I think we pretty much got up to speed on the second episode, but nonetheless, if you ever want to have a good time with somebody, when you're explaining how your show operates, especially with the ganglion, when you get in the middle of the part where you're explaining where the ganglion is, take their hand and put it on the back of your head and trap it there very lightly, and then and right when you get to the good part, telling how it comes out of the mouth and everything, turn around and act like you're gonna bite them, scare the crap out of them.
Yeah, it would do that. All right, thank you very much. And I've got to tell you, Bryce, when before the advertising began, so I might know what it would be about. NBC sent me a videotape that has all kinds of stuff at the beginning saying, you will not divulge this, you cannot keep this, you must send this back. You know, Bryce, I'm not going to send it back.
Doggone it, Art, just keep the damn thing.
They can't tell
you what to do.
It's a wonderful souvenir, Bryce. That's right, they can't. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel.
Good morning, Art and Bryce.
Hi, where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles. This is John.
Yes, John.
Congratulations on your series.
Thanks very much.
We're all primed and ready for this. It's very timely. And this is something that you might want to incorporate. I've been kind of nagging Art a little bit about it. I've called 3 or 4 times and talked to him about this.
Well, nag me.
Okay. In the Time Life series, The Art of Warfare, or The Century of Warfare.
Sure.
There is a tape that is called Gulf War and the Future. And there is a fuel-air explosion that happens on that tape.
Okay.
And around the fuel-air explosion...
Oh, yes.
There are things that appear as spheres that may be high-resolution probes that appear around it. And I believe it's the original military high-speed tape of the first event. And if you can get that tape and then slow it down and stop it one frame at a time, you can see these spheres, how they appear, and things go past them, and they don't move, and then they disappear.
All right. Well, I'll say what I've said to this man previously, and that is a fuel-air explosion is an incredibly violent event, and so that there would be anomalies on the film seen at the edge of that explosion with the... video, if you get too bright, it balloons out. And I have a feeling that's what he's seeing, but you never know.
Now, of course, if I were to use that on the show, it would probably not rise to the level of special effects, and people would say I was cheaping out on the special effects. So I'd have to do something fake to make people believe it was real. That's the kind of world we live in.
Is that really... take the scene, or some of the scenes with the ganglions.
Sure.
Very expensive to do?
Well, they're very time-consuming, because the ganglion scene that's in the pilot, for example, took the better part of 2 full days to shoot. Had it been a feature, I'm sure they would have shot on it for 2 weeks. But
wow. This
is TV, and we shot for 2 days. And it involved puppets. It involved, it involved different kinds of puppets. And in some cases, this stuff requires computer-generated effects and post and sound design, and there's all kinds of little tricks you do to make it work. And you know, the rule of thumb in doing these effects is that if you have to hold it together with chewing gum and baling wire for the 5 seconds that you need the shot, that's all that matters. It just needs to look good in that one moment.
That's right.
And I think we were relatively successful with that one.
Indeed you were. Where'd you get the title Dark Skies, and what does it mean, if anything?
Well, I give Brent the credit for that one. I was working on a series that had a lot of the precedence to what Dark Skies has become. And when Brent and I started throwing things around one day talking about UFOs, he called me the next day. His wife was my assistant at the time. And he called into her and said, tell Bryce to think about Dark Skies, and he can use it if he wants it. And, of course, that led to our partnership. And Dark Skies for us now has taken on... Dark Skies means the resistance that begins to form in 1996 after a TV series is put on the air.
Yeah, I see.
Okay, so in the first episode, you saw John Lohengard use it with Jesse Marcel, where it was the code word that got him inside. So it was the code word given
right.
by Bobby Kennedy.
That's right. Have you personally ever seen a UFO?
It's interesting that you say that, because I understand that when Spielberg was asked those questions after Close Encounters, he used to say it was too personal for him to talk about, instead of answering no. And I'd love to have some kind of glib answer, but the truth is I've seen my share of lights in the sky that I think everybody has seen, and I would ascribe the likelihood of all the things that I have seen that they were just, identifiable events to be very high. So I haven't seen anything that would be a good sighting. I do, however, have a number of people who I consider to be good, solid witnesses, and some friends and some just people that I've come to know who have seen things much more up close and personal, and they were very real to them. Toby Hooper, for example, who directed the pilot, saw your basic cigar-shaped UFO in Texas, I think, over 20 years ago, and it was anything but just a light in the sky. Toby describes it as being the real deal. I mean...
Yeah, Bryce, I saw the real deal.
Okay.
That close, 150 feet above my head, when I was 48 years old. I'd never seen another thing like you. Some lights in the skies, Maybe a few green fireballs, meteors, whatever. But, Bryce, I saw something that came directly over my head, and my wife was there as well. And we pondered for some time after we saw it, and I dragged her on the air with me and made her validate what I was saying. It was a close call, and I didn't know whether I ought to go on the air and tell everybody what I saw or not. But it changed my life.
Well, how could it not change your life? You see something like that, and you say, no one's telling us about these things, and there it is. And I, let's face it, you may not trust my account of something, but you trust your own account, and you trust your own eyes.
Oh, yes.
And your life can never be the same after an event like that.
Well, you know one of two things. You know, either our government has things that are generations beyond what they admit, many generations, or it's something from elsewhere. One of the two. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Zabel. Hi.
Yes, this is Howard in Rugby, North Dakota.
Hello there.
Yes, and great show. And Art, I have just have a quick what if for you.
For me?
Yeah.
Well, I've got a guess, sir. So do you have?
Okay. But.
Okay. I guess he just decided not to ask. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Zabel. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Hello.
Good morning, Bryce.
Hi.
Tim in Denver, Colorado. A few quick comments, and I'll get off the line. First of all, I think you have a very intelligent show on your hands. It's very good.
Thank you very much.
And second of all, I like the JFK movie feel, the faction type of feel that the show has. And third of all, try not to get out of the 60s too fast. I enjoy the 60s area. And also, when you get into the 70s, I hope you can work in the UFO influence on disco music.
You know, you are not the first person, my friend, to bring up the disco connection, so we could hardly miss that out.
Well,
you know, you're right about the 60s. We are not going to, we're moving on a collision course with New Year's Eve 1999 for what will amount to, let's see, if this is, we're coming up on New Year's of 96, so in 3 years from now we'll be arriving there. So that's our time frame. We plan to spend this season in 64, 65, and potentially getting into 66. And then next season we plan to do basically the late 60s through the end of Watergate.
Terrific. Well, I know, unfortunately, ratings has a great deal to do with the success, so I hope that everyone that's listening who hasn't tuned in will take advantage and watch the show, and if they like it, make some kind of public comment about it so the thing stays on the air.
That's a very good,
for your support.
Very good point. And while we're on the subject of ratings, how's it doing?
I think very, very well. I think NBC is as happy as they could be. Well, you know, and the numbers that the ratings that, you know, right now the entire American public is involved in the ratings game. They print it every week, and everybody follows it like they follow the stock market.
That's right.
And if you look at the overall ratings, you'll see that Dark Skies, I think, was 60th on its out of 118 shows, something like that.
And in its time slot.
Well, in its time slot, we were second. And you have to understand that last year NBC on Saturday night was a disaster, coming in a bad fourth place. So with Dark Skies and the other shows, they have moved up to second place for the night in overall numbers. But here's the kicker, and here's the reason why we're doing very well. What the networks really care about is a number that they don't print in the paper, which is the demographic of adults 18 to 49. That's the one that counts.
Right.
And in our time slot, we're number one among adults 18 to 49. And so as far as that goes, NBC, I don't think, could be any happier with our performance. And we have, you know, a lot of growth that we can make as people talk about the show and find it.
So a lot of the 70-year-olds may not be watching, but in that group that you really need, you've got them.
Well, so far, you know, it seems to be that way. And I also, you know, think that Dark Skies is very friendly to multiple generations. I have you know, young kids who enjoy watching the show because of the effects and the creatures and just the kind of the fun of the thing. But a lot of my contemporaries enjoy the show because of the 60s angle. And then my father, for example, who is watching the show, is a history teacher who I'm sure is watching the show and probably find certain things to be fairly problematic and other things to be very interesting, but it's fun to watch.
Well, as you move through the years, I think the caller made a very good point about the music. You're already utilizing it, aren't you, at every opportunity to sort of date the time along with the cars and everything else you have to...
There's just nothing better, Art, than music to set the time. And one of the great powerful things that Dark Skies can do to try to invoke its time place is to use music, and also just our set decoration, the clothes. We've got the cool sunglasses, the cool hairstyles, the cool cars, and I think that the totality of it all, the newscast, the milieu that we create every week is at least taking you to a place that, for those of you who lived in the 60s, you haven't been there for a while, and for those of us, for other people who weren't, conscious, I guess, in the 60s, it gives them a chance to go there and
that's right.
For the first time.
What about miniskirts?
Well, I don't know if they're related to the Hive or not, but we plan to have them on the series.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
I'm no fool. I've got to get ratings.
That was in the 60s, right?
You bet.
Miniskirts and... I use music all the time, Bryce. Hold tight. We're going to use a little of it right now to get out of here.
Very good.
And we'll be right back. Bryce Zabel is my guest, executive producer of Dark Skies. If you have questions, we've got answers. Stay right there.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from October 3rd, 1996.
Top of the morning to you. My guest is Bryce Zabel. He's executive producer of Dark Skies. And there are a million questions. We'll get back to them in a moment. Now to Bryce Zabel. Bryce.
I'm here.
All right, good. A lot of people want to talk to you. Listen, you didn't mind connecting yourself to the many conspiracies surrounding JFK. When you get to the Watergate years, I presume you are not going to be able to resist a bit of Richard Nixon. Am I correct?
We're going to definitely get involved in the whole Watergate
affair. I knew it. Yes, I knew it.
And I can only... phrase this as a question. Who do you think is Deep Throat? Well, we're going to tell you. That's one thing that Dark Skies does. We don't tease. We provide answers.
You're going to tell us who Deep Throat was?
You betcha.
Do you think your telling will be the truth?
Well, that's a very... As I think we have discussed already tonight, the truth is a rather slippery thing. I think that there will be elements of truth in even our fictional description, and I leave it up to the wisdom and the good sense of the viewers to decide which part is which.
Somebody sends me a fax and wants to know, what if a bunch of dark suits... bunch of guys in black suits and white shirts and narrow ties with the NBC logo on them show up at my door to demand the return of the tape. Ron from Birmingham, Alabama. The answer to that, Ron, is I claim self-defense. Let's see. P.S. Enjoying Dark Skies. Only question is, can it keep up the level of interest and excitement it has established thus far?
I think we can. I think that's our goal, and we certainly intend to do that. Your listener may be referring to the fact that you can't trot out Roswell and JFK in the same episode every week. And to that extent, that's clearly true. We can't do that. What we hope to do, though, is build our world of Dark Skies to such a degree and our characters that inhabit the world of Dark Skies to such a degree that we don't need Roswell and Kennedy every week for you to stay interested. Well, we thought that the Roswell-Kennedy connection was a very strong way to get the show started because that way you have a really interesting story to watch while you're getting used to the world of Dark Skies.
That's true. First time caller line, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Yes, hello. This is Jim calling from, I'm in Redding, California, KQMS.
Yes, sir.
And a couple of questions. Bryce, you mentioned that you were a TV journalist, got your start as a reporter and a journalist. Weren't you also a fledgling television weatherman?
Really?
That's quite true. I did the weather for a couple of years off and on up in Eugene, even took a crack at it in Arizona. Is this somebody that I know from that time?
I think you do, yes.
Is this Jim?
Hey. This is Jim. I really live in Eugene.
Jim was the original weatherman, and I sort of studied under him and never actually got it as right as he got it.
And so that is not where the expression, the name Dark Skies, came from.
That's true, although I have been influenced by meteorological events, obviously, for a good long time.
All right, Jim, thanks.
Bryce, I have a question.
Oh, all right.
How many... Bryce has quite a bit of experience in this type of thing, including experience on the... he was one of the originators of the very successful Lois and Clark Superman series.
That's true.
Really? It is? Why didn't you tell us that?
I guess we just hadn't gotten around to it. I don't claim to have invented Superman, or even I didn't write the pilot for Lois and Clark. Deborah Joy Levine did, but I came aboard as one of the first people when the show was in the first season. I was there before they even shot the pilot, and it was a terrific fun because I got a chance to do such things as reinvent the Superman coming to Earth storyline. I got to come up with my own take on what kryptonite was and how it worked. And
wow.
And in fact, it's kind of interesting. I tied the entire Superman mythology in with UFOs. I made his crash in Smallville a UFO event that was being tracked by the ultra-mysterious Bureau 39, which was kind of my knockoff for Majestic 12.
Well, Bryce, with your experience in network television, how many shows are proposed to the major networks versus how many eventually get on the air?
It's a shocking amount that they develop every year. First of all, there's 10,000 members of the Writers Guild for an example, and a lot of them are TV writers and trying to pitch shows to the network. The network. Here's thousands of pitches. There's no single network, but all the networks hear thousands of pitches, out of which they may decide to, develop scripts for several hundred, out of which they may, they might develop more scripts than that. But, I mean, it's a winnowing process, and it's one hoop after another. And to actually get a show on the air...
Your statement.
First of all, you sort of have to get in the club to be one of the people that they want to sort of trust... writing a pilot for a TV series, because it requires a whole picture. He's going to make three times what the entire Dark Skies pilot cost.
All right, well, here's a good question. If Dark Skies, after the end of the first season, is a big hit, does your budget go up?
Hopefully a little bit. Right now, we're having trouble meeting our exact budget, and we're going out a little high, and let's face it, success is the best thing that you can have going. I've talked to some people who are on successful shows, and basically they'll tell you off the record, well, basically there is no budget. We write the script and they go try to shoot it, and that is clearly not what's happening with us right now. We have a healthy budget for a one-hour drama, but we are hardly unlimited, and once you get on the air, people are... we have an accountant who's literally got an office in our building, and his job is to worry about things.
Hey, listen, you mentioned you worked on the Superman thing.
Sure.
Any reaction to the recent news that Superman is marrying Lois Lane? Is that a mistake?
Well, in the world of television, there is a sort of a phrase that you have to keep up that unresolved sexual tension, or URST. And that's what Lois and Clark have had for three seasons, and that's what Lois Lane and Clark Kent in the comic books have had for over 60 years.
Exactly.
Is it a mistake? I don't think it's a mistake, because you have to grow or die in this business, and they're simply doing with their characters what I think that we're planning to do, which is to let people grow up and change. And Superman, by the way, is no longer quite the character that all of us grew up with. I mean, he's got long hair now, and he gets angry, and he, you know, he has a whole lot of human-like foibles for an alien from Krypton.
I mean, domestic abuse for Lois would be a horror.
That would not be a pretty sight.
No.
Don't go there.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Yes, this is Pat in Portland, Oregon.
Hello, Pat.
On KEX.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm glad I got through, and hope I speak for a few other listeners with my question. Regarding the JFK-Roswell connection,
sure.
A question that I have goes to your research into that. I don't know how much you did, but there's obviously been a lot of speculation out there that you find about the potential for a connection there. It seems like a natural enough thing mm-hmm. to wonder about if you accept, you know, a Roswell scenario and something like Majestic as having been real. Wondering if... you're going to develop a character, you don't have to give this away if you don't want to, of course, but a character based on Dorothy Kilgallen.
Oh, boy.
If you're familiar with her.
Oh, I'm not only am I familiar, I'm kind of rocking back in my chair here that you said that.
Yeah, well, she's not very well known, but,
let me tell you something.
Wait a minute. Maybe there's a reason for his rocking back.
Okay.
Well, Dorothy Kilgallen is a major player in the Dark Skies universe.
Yeah.
And in fact, you will be seeing, assuming that we do an entire season, you'll be seeing a storyline on Dark Skies that ties in the fact that Dorothy Kilgallen had been interviewing Jack Ruby
yes.
before her death,
and
was planning to expose what she thought would be the real truth of the Kennedy assassination. She died under mysterious circumstances in New York the night before the New York power blackout.
Exactly. And
in Dark Skies, we're going to tie those two events together.
She was also the very first to break in the media anything about a possible UFO crash and the military having access to it.
See, Dorothy Kilgallen is not the person that we all remember from, was it What's My Line? Or I've Got a Secret, I can't remember now.
Whatever.
But she is not that person. She's a person who was a fairly credible journalist.
Yes, she was a very well-known journalist at the time.
And I would love to, I don't know what happened to the manuscript of the book that she was working on. It never got out.
Yeah, but she had indeed reported in one of her columns at one point, this was in Britain, a rumor that she had heard from someone in British top brass.
Sure.
About the British military having inspected a crashed saucer, and that was as early as the early 50s, and very few people have attempted to tie that together or wondered about the possible connection with Jack Ruby, but it's good to know that you're going to be going in that direction.
So you know what happens is that when you start to develop one episode after another and characters that work come back, or for example, you cast a particularly terrific actor and you want to use him more. So, for example, a year ago, I probably wouldn't have told you that Jack Ruby was going to become the main character that he's becoming.
Uh-huh.
But not only have we found so many interesting connections for the guy, but we also love the actor that plays him.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be using the entire Jack Ruby storyline. And it's fascinating. I mean, he tried to kill himself in prison. He was killed mysteriously in prison.
Yes, and he said also, of course, that the truth about this would never come out in our lifetimes.
Well, that's we're going to say that John Lonegard testified to the Warren Commission and that his testimony was sealed until 1999.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Good morning, Art. This is Scott in KFA's country.
Wichita, yes, sir.
Well, I'm about 28 miles straight south of there.
Okay.
But let me get three quickies for your guest, Bryce, and then I got a comment for you.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. I haven't seen Dark Side yet, but I plan to watch it Saturday.
No, you're not.
You're not going to watch it this Saturday, but thanks.
Yes, sir.
No, you're not. It's not on. It's got a two-week hiatus. Thank you very much, baseball.
Okay, well...
Next question.
When it gets on, I'll make sure to watch it.
All right.
Three quick ones. Do you... thinking about maybe putting something to do with the Apollo 13 flight.
Hmm.
I'll tell you one of the things that, just to give you sort of an insight into how Dark Skies approaches its story selection, Apollo 13's already had a big movie done about it, and a lot of people are talking about it. Our attempt would be probably to if we can't find something really, really cool to do about Apollo 13, we have another take. And we, in fact, how many Apollo flights were there? There were supposed to be 17, right? Apollo 17?
Mm-hmm.
We will do the story of Apollo 18.
Ah, of course. Of course. And, you know, I have a guest frequently. You may know his name, Richard Hoagland.
Oh, boy, I know him well.
Oh, yes. He is convinced, and has convinced many, there are artifacts on the moon from an ancient civilization. And it's not so wild, Bryce, because right now here on Earth, archaeologists are beginning to figure out that, for example, the Sphinx, the pyramids are far, far older than we previously thought.
Exactly.
And so that leaves room for something that may have been here long ago, and that must be awfully tempting.
It's so tempting, I can't stay away from it. We will be doing in fact, we have the very next episode is called Mercury Rising, and it deals with sort of a black ops program within the NASA program, and it does have to do with a secret moon base, and I think you'll be very intrigued by it.
I knew it. I suppose you guys are having fits at the two-week hiatus after just two episodes. How unfair, huh?
It's nuts. But on the other hand, I don't necessarily blame NBC because they wanted to put us on the air and get their new Saturday night lineup launch. So they did the right thing there, and it's, I guess it's not their fault that they have to go up against baseball, and I guess to their credit, they're not sacrificing us against, they've got baseball. They have to put it on. So I think that
just
one
like
thing that
affiliates.
I can say is I don't think NBC will be holding us responsible for having great numbers when we return, and maybe we'll surprise everybody.
Maybe you will indeed. A lot of people will be waiting. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Hey, thanks, you guys. You got between radio and TV, we got some light into some dark, isolated lives out here.
Oh, good.
I wanted to say a couple of things. If God says we're his children, how come we keep calling his messengers aliens? And evolution spelled backwards is know it you love. Another thing, Mars might be a picture of Earth a couple of hundred years from now, especially when you look at that upside-down Sphinx area that they saw in. Then maybe Jupiter is another couple of hundred years hence.
Right. Where are you, dear?
California.
California. All right. Bryce, what about God? You know, she mentioned God. Will the series in any way touch on a creative force?
I think you can't do a series about another life form that is perceived as a hostile one to ours and not get involved with what is God, and is God to everybody, and I think these are all issues. And in fact, I must tell you, we're doing an episode that takes place during the Alaska earthquake, where it's about faith and whether you know what you believe in and so forth, and it's quite interesting. The issue you raise, I don't have any great answers to the ultimate mystery of the universe, but I think that you cannot do a show of this level without looking square in the eye of the idea of a creator and coming up with at least some take on it. So we'll give it a shot.
Will you play with the concept that those aliens created us?
We're verging into the one thing I probably, because I want to make for a very fun ride for the fans who will take the ride with us.
Yes.
I can't reveal some of the ultimate
that's fine.
Plans that we have.
That's fine.
But let's put it this way. The interaction that has been experienced has probably been going on a great deal longer than 1947, and it need not be confined to simply one species of alien. That's all I could say.
Well, that was going to be another question. Will there be other species? And you just really answered that. Yes, there will.
Well, there will be, although, again, I want to make it clear, once people start, if people can either, if we start doing things that begin to appear repetitive or we get in a rut or people start to think that they've figured it out completely, then we're going to change our game and we're going to try to become unpredictable and surprising.
One episode might be an interesting episode about some poor talk show host who gets a bunch of Roswell parts sent to him.
I must say, I called up your website, and I've been reading about that, and I find it fascinating because I had a similar kind of experience offered to me last year that did not reach fruition as yours seems to have, and I'm fascinated. What do you make, Art? Do you think these are the real deal?
Yes, it appears that way. When I say real deal, these are either extraterrestrial artifacts or they are government artifacts that have come from back-engineered craft. Either way, it's important hard evidence.
Did you maintain a chain of, of possession on these things?
Very careful one,
okay.
Yes. Oh, a very careful one, Bryce.
Well, you're doing very important work. If you're able to, I mean, let's face it, that's the thing we've all been waiting for, is somebody to have something that is irrefutable, and if that day can come sooner than later, I'd be happy for it.
There are a few things right now even I can't talk about that relate to this of late, and there's some big stuff coming. That's all I can say, and that's a little bit of a teaser. Listen, Bryce, we're at the end of the hour. Do you want to do one more?
Sure, I'll stick around.
Oh, excellent. All right, Bryce Zabel is my guest. By the way, my wife is on AOL hosting a kind of Ask Bryce a Question session. If you want to get there, simply go to America Online, use keyword Art Bell, my name, or keyword Periscope, and then go to the chat area on AOL in Periscope called The Grassy Knoll. Pretty appropriate, huh? We'll be right back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
And my guest is Bryce Zabel, who is the executive producer of Dark Skies. If you have questions, we've got answers. Well, for most of them anyway. I'm Art Bell, and we'll get back to Bryce in just one moment. Auspicious night for Bryce Zabel to be here. Sean and Phil from KKOH in Reno have sent the following to me. It is a follow-up. Experts say a colorful flash of light that lit up the entire northeastern western sky may have been, get this, a dying satellite or chunk of space rock. People from San Francisco to New Mexico reported seeing the mysterious greenish-yellow flash shortly before 9 last night. Witnesses say it lasted only seconds, but was intensely bright. An astronomer at the Griffith Park Observatory says the flash probably was caused by space debris burning up as it entered the atmosphere. John Mosley says this is probably the biggest flash they've seen in 2 years. He said the meteor was probably a crumbly piece of asteroid or possibly a fragment of a comet. But Frank O'Donnell, a spokesman for NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, says it also might have been a falling satellite. So that's the real world, folks, going on tonight. Once again, here's Bryce Zabel. Bryce, it could have been something else, too, couldn't it?
Well, I'm coming up with my own theories. What do you think it is?
Pods. Pods, Bryce, pods.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I'm enjoying is I'm loving how this the word ganglion slips so naturally into conversation.
Yeah,
I think we've got something
so.
Here.
Oh, I'm sure you do. I'm telling you, it was one of the you've almost got to turn away from the TV screen moments.
We were all wondering, and I'm still wondering because they haven't tested this thing to death yet. Although I'm sure they will. You always sort of start a TV series and say, well, what do I think the audience wants? What can I give them that'll be fun and make this a worthwhile, experience to watch? And the whole ganglion thing may or may not be. I mean, I've already, on the internet scene that some people are appalled by it and some people love it. And,
that's right.
And I guess that's where we are.
No, that's exactly right. Some people are appalled by it. And it was slightly appalling in one way.
In a very good way, though.
Yeah, some people are appalled by the fact that you used it, had to have a monster, but personally, I like monsters. Dear Art, I'd like to know, is there any plan to work the Alien Autopsy film into Dark Skies at some point?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Art. We like to look at our series as kind of the Mobius strip of reality. It keeps turning in on itself.
Sure.
And so the notion that there is an Alien Autopsy film, that there have been knockoffs of it, you know, that may or may not be true, all of that will figure prominently into Dark Skies when we catch up with the time of the Alien Autopsy. I will tell you this, by the way. When we were shooting Dark Skies, we talked to a number of people that we were trying to hire to do our creature effects and also the computer-generated effects, and we ran across someone who said that he had been approached in Europe to do the Fox autopsy film, to do the special effects for it.
So
I find that shocking. I don't find it shocking that the thing is fake, because it looks like a fake to me, and I think it's been fairly much talked about in that regard. But I find it shocking that Fox might actually have paid somebody to...
Well, yes and no. Now, remember some of the better special effects people who Fox had on and said, we can't do this.
Sure. I think they were trying to say something to get on TV.
You could have done it.
I think we did do it, and we could do it better if we set out to do it.
Wait a minute. You better be careful with that statement. You said, I think we did do it.
Well, I mean, I think...
You did it, Bryce?
No. Caught me. Let's take that transcript, will you?
Yeah, right.
I guess what I'm saying is I think that had we set out to make an Alien Autopsy film that would look like it came from Roswell and had a reasonable budget and reasonable time, I saw that special, and I never quite understood exactly why these effects people were saying, boy, that's just so good, I don't know how we would do it. I see things routinely that are more convincing.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Art?
Yes, sir.
Bryce?
Yes.
This is Charles.
Where are you, Charles?
KCMO.
Oh, Kansas City.
Missouri.
All right. Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
Yes. I want to bring up the fact that I think Adamski was lied to, George Adamski.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an alternative explanation which I have uncovered. It's in the public, but nevertheless, I uncovered it.
Sir, who are you saying George Adamski was lied to by? About what?
I think he was lied to by German regime, possibly government.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which. I'm sure that if it was Germans, it was an ex-Nazi regime.
All right, thank you. Now, that brings us to the government question, at least, Bryce.
Mm-hmm. We can even do the Nazi question.
Listen, you know, referring to what the caller said, there was a lot of strange stories that have come out of the Third Reich era about UFOs and all kinds of strange things.
In fact, I'll tell you that as we were shooting the pilot film, NBC gave us an order for 6 backup scripts. And so one of the backup scripts that we wrote was an episode called Hostile Convergence about the Socorro, New Mexico landing of 1964, where a police officer named Lonnie Zamora had actually seen something land. And our explanation for what landed in Socorro, New Mexico was a Nazi saucer. In that script. And interestingly enough, of all the crazy, odd, bizarre ideas that I have floated and hope to float in the future past studio and network executives, this was the one where they said, well, nobody could ever believe that. How could you say that? That's just too outrageous. And so there will be no Nazi saucers on Dark Skies.
I see. How many are in the can, Bryce?
We are shooting currently, I believe, our 6th episode.
6th.
And so we're, you know, we have it's tough because we have a lot of post-production that we have to do.
Do you take advantage of, for example, the 2 weeks hiatus right now? Are you still working
on... Oh, we're cranking.
cranking.
We're cranking. By the way, just as something that was very unusual in the world of series television, you know, I thought we had a terrific two-hour pilot, and then we had actually Brent and I, among these backup scripts, had written an episode called "Paranoia Strikes Deep," which took place exclusively in Dallas, Texas. And the network originally said, well, we don't think anyone will be interested in Kennedy, because we had they had done the JFK movie that Oliver Stone had done, and
right.
They'd re-aired it, and it didn't do well for them. So they said, no one will be interested in Kennedy, so you can't do that. So we had to throw out our Paranoia Strikes Deep script, and we shot another episode instead about Lone Guard going home in the aftermath to get money. And
right.
Frankly, we all looked at that film about 3 weeks ago and said, you know, this is a good episode, but it ain't a great episode. And so we literally put it downstream. You'll see some version of it air later. And we wrote an entire new episode that merged the best parts of the Paranoia script in with the Roswell situation, and made the episode that you saw last week, Moving Targets.
Right.
And that is highly unusual. The crew had to kill themselves. We normally would have like a 40-day post. We did the post on that in 11 days.
Yikes.
So that's how much we cared to start with, you know, the best material for the fans.
What about a general comment, Bryce? You know, I've been doing this sort of thing for many, many, many years, this show for about 13, dealing with these kinds of topics. But in the last 2 years, it has absolutely gone nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely gone nuts. Not just Dark Skies, but so many other series and reports, and the whole genre has exploded. And here you are at just the right time with Dark Skies. Do you agree with that?
Well, I do think that the time is certainly right for it. I think a couple of trends are kind of cresting right now. We are harvesting in the 90s a distrust of the government that was begun basically going back even before the Kennedy assassination to you know, the fact that there were LSD experiments the CIA was doing, to the fact that
they were feeding plutonium to people,
bomb tests, all that kind of, that, you know, Watergate, Iran-Contra. We are harvesting the paranoia and the distrust of government.
I don't think it's at all over, because the other day, for example, yesterday, we went from 150 soldiers exposed to some sort of nerve agent in the Gulf War to about 100,000.
Well, that's a great example of. So, is it any more outrageous that they would have covered up a spacecraft that crashed in Roswell? In fact, it's far less outrageous.
Clearly.
So, I think that trend is big. I also believe that one of the things that's happening is that people realize there is a core truth to the UFO phenomenon. Therefore, they are more open to hearing about it. And then finally, you take those two powerful mixtures of paranormal and paranoid, for I guess para squared or whatever, but you take those and you shake a liberal dose of millennium fervor into it, and you have got a time where people want to hear about this.
That's right. All right, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Hi, Bryce. Nice talking to you. It's an honor.
Well, where are you, sir?
I'm in Sacramento.
Okay.
I was going to ask him if he is familiar with Billy Meier, and if so, if he's going to work Billy Meier into it, and also the Great Pyramids.
All right.
Let's take Billy Meier. I am familiar with Billy Meier, and our intent, I think, would be to try to, let's face it, in the whole UFO literature, there's probably 30 or 40 key player events that, some of them hoaxes, some of them the real deal, some of them unknown, but all of them part of our literature, and Billy Meier happens to be one of them, and he will definitely be worked in when we get to that time. Of course, that also implies that we're going to broaden widen our net from the United States to the entire world, which is also part of our plan and success.
Will you continue to brush up against the crop circle thing?
Well, more than brush up against it, I think that it's incumbent upon our show to, at some point, just like we were talking about God earlier, where you have to, you know, there are certain issues raised that you just have to deal with.
Yes.
Crop circles are a real phenomenon, and we have to provide our Dark Skies explanation for it, and we will.
Have you seen photographs of the recent ones, the big ones, Stonehenge?
Shocking.
Shocking is right. Not done by humans.
No.
And not done by humans in 10 to 15 minutes, and they've got a lot of evidence that's the time frame that it occurred in.
I find that amazing, and I will throw this out for you too, Art. In a way, one of the benefits of the Dark Skies pilot is that I believe that we proved these things are not being faked or hoaxed. It took us 3 days with three people working full-time with a helicopter to make our crop circle.
You're kidding.
No, to get it right.
3 days,
yeah,
three guys, people, full-time,
helicopter. And even at that, if you were to look at our crop circle up close, it wouldn't bear inspection because the stalks were hardly swirled. We just crushed them down.
I see.
To make this thing.
Bryce, Stonehenge was 191 circles covering 10 acres, done in 10 to 15 minutes during the day.
Now, the 10 to 15 minute notice, where'd that come from?
That came from a pilot who flew over that precise area and then flew over it again 15 minutes later and signed an affidavit.
Well, shocking is the only word that you can express. Now, you've probably done a number of programs delving into the subject. Is there a consensus that you feel is emerging as to what's going on?
Well, I can tell you that a lot of mathematicians see them as fractal.
Mm-hmm.
They see them as mathematical symbols to be deciphered. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
El Paso, Texas.
All right.
And I wanted to ask if you're going to be if Dark Skies will be tied in with the Pretender series.
Mm-hmm.
Because I noticed in their pilot episode, the main character figured out or pretended to be Oswald, and he said that he couldn't do it. There had to be another gunner.
Sure. I saw that. It's funny seeing that. We were joking the other day that about that. I guess ideas are in the air, and I guess they were going in the same area. Is your question as to whether we would have any formal tie-in with these people?
Yeah, or have something where it crosses over. You see it in both episodes.
I'd rather have it cross over with the X-Files, to be honest with you.
Ah.
No, but I mean, you know, NBC has actually brought that up as a concept, and I guess my feeling is let's get these shows established, and it would be a fine thing, although there is the time frame difference. So in other words, this character that they have in The Pretender, Jared, would need to be stumbled across by John Lonegard as a young boy in our show, and in their show, we'd have an old Eric Close playing John Lonegard coming across their character.
Yeah, I thought about that when I was...
Which could be kind of fun, I think, for people.
All right. Let me ask you, Bryce, are there any plans to do an X-Files crossover?
I don't think... First of all, I don't even know Chris Carter, I doubt that on any creative level we'd even... You know, the fans would even want to see that, but I think that there are so many practical impossibilities. We're produced by different production companies, and we're on different networks. X-Files tried to do a crossover with Picket Fences, I think, a season or two ago, and they were able to do that only, I think, because they're both produced by Fox Television.
Mm-hmm. All right, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Where are you, please?
Hi, this is Jeff in Spokane.
Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Art. Just want to say you got a great show, Bryce. I like your show.
Thanks very much.
You bet. Well, the last guy kind of took my thunder, but that's okay. I've been a big X-Files fan ever since it started.
Uh-huh.
I have practically every episode on tape. I plan on taping every episode of yours, regardless of whether it gets me into any type of legal, you know, problems, but I don't really care.
Tape away.
Exactly. Thank you. I really like your show because two of my favorite shows, sci-fi-wise at least, have been, other than Star Trek, have been X-Files and The Invaders, and I think you embody both of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pleased to see them bring back The Invaders on Fox, last year, about a year ago or so, and too bad they didn't follow through with it, but anyway.
I think we have kind of a fresher take.
Well, it is.
On the invasion.
In a lot of respects, it kind of, it is along the same lines. I have a couple of quick questions, well, hopefully quick questions for you here. One, I know the next episode that we saw trailer for was regarding the space race.
Yes.
And you've already talked a little bit about that. I hope you're going to go into the sightings that various astronauts have supposedly made. I mean, I believe them personally, but I'll just say supposedly. Regarding some UFOs including what some of the space shuttle astronauts have taped while they were up?
Yeah, absolutely. We will hopefully incorporate all of that. Although, again, you know, we're going boldly. I guess we haven't gone before. We'll not only have astronauts commenting on lights that they're seeing off in the distance, but in this next episode, our astronauts are going to have a very close encounter.
Oh.
Great. I like J.T. Walsh as a character actor, and I'm glad to see him established in something for at least a set period of time. I hope you're going to continue him as one of the main characters throughout the life of the show.
I think J.T. is terrific. I know that I have him for a two-year contract, and hopefully he'll stay with us after that, but at least, let's face it, J.T. Walsh has been seen in at least 50 feature films. He's so widely recognized.
Oh,
but
exactly.
I think this is the first time where people are going to start to know the man by his name and get to see him grow as a character.
All right, Bryce, hang tight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from October 3rd, 1996. Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 3rd of October, 1996.
My guest is Bryce Sable. He's the executive producer of Dark Skies and a believer. If you have any questions for him, come now. We've got about another 25 minutes or so. And this has been fun, hasn't it? This morning, we're dealing with a real piece of breaking news about something that entered our atmosphere and was seen, I can tell you more than the Associated Press has told us, was seen as far away as Fairbanks, Alaska. They're talking about along the entire West Coast. I can tell you I've got people from New Mexico to Alaska that saw it. The scientists are saying it was or may have been a re-entering satellite, it may have been a piece of asteroid or comet, but it brings to mind a really good question for Bryce. Bryce, a network, because I can't remember which one,
mm-hmm.
a couple of years ago ran a show called Without Warning. Do you remember that?
I do. I do remember. That was sort of in the same style as Special Bulletin, I believe.
Right. And it talked about the possibility of... they were asteroids, first thought to be, just accidents, that we were in a sort of an area of a lot of them, and they were coming in, and we blew them up with nukes, and it turned out that was a bad idea because they were actually sending us a signal that we should have responded to. Instead, we blew them out of the air, kind of the way you had that saucer blown out of the air. And this should be one of these days, like that object that came in tonight, had it been bigger, or even much bigger, we wouldn't be doing this interview right now.
This is very true.
And they say you never see the one that gets you. Bullets and asteroids. Now, that might be a tempting a plot line one of these times.
That's a good plot line. Another one that we were kicking around would be the return of the 12th planet kind of idea.
Zachariah Sitchin.
Mm-hmm.
Interviewed him last week.
Oh, you did?
I did indeed. All right, back to the people who watch your show. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi, where are you, please?
Hello, Art. This is David near 550 St. Louis.
Yes, sir.
And I just want to say I really enjoyed Dark Skies and, of course, your show, Art. My question to Bryce is, I was wondering if he had heard or been familiar with remote viewing and was planning to incorporate that subject into his show. And more specifically, if he'd heard of Courtney Brown's book, Cosmic Voyage, which specifically deals with extraterrestrials and their culture.
Good point. All right.
Yes, I've heard of remote viewing, and I've even seen that book. I think it's our intention, definitely, to delve into that issue. One of the things that we're hampered by, but we're not really hampered by it, but it's just a reality we have to deal with. We want to be appropriate to our time frame and not introduce concepts in the 60s necessarily coming to the forefront in the 90s.
Yes, but when you get to the 70s, Bryce,
mm-hmm.
Ted Koppel did a Nightline show and had remote viewers on and released the news on that show that the U.S. government had secretly been doing remote viewing, had spent $20 million over the last 20 years. So
we can definitely get into that.
You could sure hit it in the 70s.
Well, I in fact, one of the things that we're saying is, okay, well, maybe you think it happened in the 70s, but it really happened in the 60s.
That's exactly right.
We can always fall back on that. So our intent would be to get into it. I find it fascinating.
Vietnam.
We are getting to Vietnam in about 8 weeks, and the episode's called White Rabbit, and it will deal with the real truth behind the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And we'll be doing our version of Apocalypse Now.
Oh, excellent. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Yes, hello. Where are you?
This is Al in Tucson.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Bryce.
Hi.
Got one question and two comments.
Sure.
I apologize if this has been answered before, but KTUC only joined the show this hour. My question is, what is it the main character, John, found in the crop circle in the first episode? And the two comments on, I guess,
I'm sorry, what did John find in the crop circle?
Yeah, it was like a piece of gold.
Oh, right, yes. He literally found a gold plate in the crop circle that had the hive glyph, that is what we call it, which was also that is the symbol of what will come to be known as singularity, and we'll explain that in future episodes.
Oh, okay. And the two comments were, I don't mean to sound like a bad guy here, but in the second episode, I believe it was when the military parade was supposed to be taking place during Kennedy's funeral. Part of the parade was some military plane flying overhead, and then the Air Force One. And I guess
right.
The show said it was a 747.
I believe we said it was a 707.
Oh, I might be wrong, but
I was led to believe that's accurate. I think that is accurate.
707.
707 is accurate, yes.
Yeah, that's what we said.
Okay. And the other thing is that, the guy from Majestic, I forgot his name.
Frank Bach.
Okay, yes. I believe he said in the first episode that he was appointed by President Eisenhower.
Right.
And in the second episode, he's taking orders from Truman.
Yes. There's an explanation for that, but it may not be good enough to satisfy anybody. I mean, let me tell you what happened. Your caller is referring to the argument between Frank Bach and John Lonegard in the pilot, where Lonegard says, "Who appointed you, God?"
Yes.
And then Frank Bach says, "Ike." And the idea, and actually both answers are right, except I know it doesn't sound right. When he said Ike appointed him God, what he meant was, the idea that you don't have to tell the President of the United States what you're up to is what Ike is the power that Ike gave him by signing an executive order after Nixon lost the election to Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that regard, Ike did appoint him God. Of course, in the first episode, Bach actually takes or gets given some kind of command authority over the Roswell situation by Harry Truman, and so it clearly sounds like a discontinuity, but we were talking about two different things, and frankly, the first episode was one of those things that happened because we had written the continuity, and then the network allowed us to go ahead and do the Roswell situation.
Bryce, if you were in charge of MJ-12,
yes,
would you tell Clinton?
Well, let me break that into two parts. Let's go back to 1947 to the original sin first, and then I'll answer that.
All right.
Going back to the original sin, I think it's entirely consistent the cover-up. If you think about 47, you've just fought a war with the Nazis that almost took the whole world down.
That's right.
Now you're facing a Cold War that, if it gets hot, could lead to nuclear Armageddon. And in the middle of this little stew, a flying saucer crashes in the New Mexico desert.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know how it got there, and you don't know what it's capable of, and you don't have a lot of answers. You're probably going to keep that to yourself. So I understand why they went down the road of cover-up. Now, your question about if I was on Majestic 12 now, would I tell Clinton? I guess the answer is I'm not the kind of guy they put on Majestic 12. But
that's an evasion?
It is an evasion. Here's the deal. I'm a former journalist. In the argument over the two sides of the argument are the public can't handle the truth and the public has a right to know.
Uh-huh.
I come down on the public has a right to know. I do understand that there's a lot of people who might even be patriots who come down on the public can't handle the truth because they've seen things like the Orson Welles' War of the Worlds broadcast, and they think people can't even handle fiction, so they sure as hell can't handle fact.
Well, it's a good question then to ask, is Dark Skies helping that process or hurting it?
I don't think it's hurting anything, and I believe that the fact that I'm on your show now and I'm having a dialogue with people from all over the United States on this topic, and we're talking about a TV show, and I think that those of us who are talking about it understand it's a TV show, and yet our dialogue is able to advance beyond the TV show to a discussion of the of the real situation. So I think we are dramatic proof of the negation of that.
Well, in one sense, certainly that's true, and I think most people understand it is a TV show, but there are a lot of, you know, true believers out there that are somewhat offended at what it's psychologically doing to the American people. In other words, if we are being prepared for contact, surely that thing yanked from that guy's brain isn't going to help anybody to walk up to the nearest spaceship. But you're saying they shouldn't.
Well, let me put it this way. I wish maybe there are some people in this country who absolutely know the quote-unquote truth. I don't know any of them, and I'm certainly not one of them. So I can't really speak for exactly what the truth is, but I think we should, and because of that, I think we should proceed with caution no matter what we're doing. But in terms of, you know, a lot of people talk about the rollout of this information.
You bet.
Let's assume that there is a rollout that is being, postured for. First of all, I'm not part of it. I'm just a guy doing a TV show. But to the extent that there is a rollout, this is just another part of the cultural landscape that that rollout will have to deal with.
I say the same thing. I'm not part of it. I'm just a guy doing a radio show.
Yeah.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Just fine.
Very good.
This is Wayne. I'm in Salt Lake City.
Yes, sir.
I've got a few comments and a question for both of you.
All right.
Bryce, has any of Art's guests or Art himself had a major influence on your programming? And Art, have you considered opting yourself for being a part of the program?
You know me and TV.
Listen, we would be, if Art would not take offense, I would think that at some day we would love to have some influential person broadcasting out of the Nevada desert and make a character out of that.
And Art,
yes,
Dr. James Hurtock.
Yes,
it's the first time I heard your show.
Yes, sir.
And it's changed my life over the last few months. I'd like to know when you're going to have him on the show again.
Soon. The answer is soon.
You'll post it on your webpage?
Of course I will. Thank you. And Dark Skies has a webpage, doesn't it?
Yes, we do. We have several unofficial ones, and we have the official NBC one. And by the way, for those people who are computer literate in your audience, which I assume is most of them, look for something called the Dark Site, which as soon as the funding comes through, I've seen the prototype for it. It will not say anything about a TV show, but it will allow you to go into Majestic 12 and become an analyst of UFOs.
Oh, my.
And it's very cool.
All right. Coming up, perhaps when?
It's getting funded now, so it could be on the Internet in the next month.
All right. The Dark Site, huh?
The Dark Site.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Abel. Hello.
Hello, Bryce. I was wanting to ask you a question.
All right, where are you, sir?
Oh, I'm in Florida.
Florida, all right.
Yes, sir. I was wondering if there would ever be an episode where there might be a radio talk show host.
Here we go again.
There's a lobbying effort going on here.
Well,
I think that would be a great idea. I really would. You know, maybe not for several, you know, episodes, but at least for one or maybe two episodes.
I think we have the most flexible concept around. And, you know, I could see Art becoming the Wolfman Jack of our series here.
All right, enough. Thank you for the call, sir.
Okay.
Jeez. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Bryce Zabel. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Jim from Fresno, California.
Yes, Jim.
Your friendly neighborhood ethnomycologist.
By the way, Fresno is where John Lonegard's from.
Yeah, I know. That's really a trip. It was really funny, too, that the movie The Puppet Masters, their main nest of all the aliens was in Fresno City Hall.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was called on the show, it was called Boulder, Colorado.
Uh-huh.
But it was actually filmed at Fresno City Hall. So
there's something going on in Fresno.
Yeah, I've always thought that myself.
Well, let me tell you what I think it is. And this is getting into what Zechariah Sitchin talks about. And as a matter of fact, my first book, which should be coming out shortly, is being published by the same company that's doing Zechariah Sitchin's most recent book.
Well, what do you think it is?
Well, I think there's some information here that isn't anywhere else. And what that deals with, and real quick, along with the lines of what Zechariah Sitchin talks about, the aliens that came here that did genetic manipulation on primitive man to create Homo sapiens, there's another story that's also in the cuneiform clay tablets from Mesopotamia that deals with the tree of knowledge
mm-hmm.
that man eats. And the gods don't want man to eat of this because it opens his eyes. And the one god Enki, or Ea, he's the one that fed it to them. Now, this tree of knowledge is the Amanita muscaria mushroom, the same mushroom that is in all the other religions. So this is something that, this is really the heavy stuff when it comes to alien research and religious research. And real quick, one little tidbit about this information is that, have you ever wondered why during Christmas you put a brightly colored package underneath a pine tree to give each other as a present for the representation of God's gift to man? The
wow.
reason is because the Amanita muscaria grows exclusively under pine trees, coniferous trees. And during the rainy season, you'll go up and you'll find it underneath the tree, and it's red and white, and it's a little package. Also, Easter is the same type of a thing.
All right, sir, I appreciate it. It's going to get very sensitive for you, Bryce, when you get to the point where aliens meet God, and those kind of questions begin to manifest.
Well, I
how you
say
handle
one thing.
That?
I don't have a specific response to anything the college has said except that. It is going to be clear and become clear to people watching our show that the framework that we're tying our show into is not a limited one that has to do only with our current day, but is going to expand into the future and into the past.
And into the past. All right, one more if we can fit it in. First time caller line, you're on the air with Bryce Zabel. Hi.
Hey, Art, how's it going?
Okay.
Where
are you?
I'm in, just outside of Los Angeles.
All right.
Driving to my gym tonight in Hollywood off Santa Monica Boulevard. Saw this amazing fireball in the sky.
I know. We're about
wow.
to get into it. Everybody's seen it, or millions have seen it.
Oh, it was amazing. And, you know, I grew up in the country in Canada, and, you know, I've seen a lot of shooting stars, man. And this.
I know. I was told it nearly turned the sky to day.
Well, to see an object like that above a city as bright as Los Angeles, it tells you something about it. I thought it went down in the Hollywood Hills. I even stopped two groups of LAPD officers and said, man, did you guys get any reports on something coming down? Because this thing was big.
Right.
You know, I don't know what you're hearing about green lights, though, because this thing was a fireball.
A fireball, yeah. A green fireball is what a lot of people have said. Well,
it was an orange fireball.
Well, yeah, I know. But remember, you've got an atmosphere there in L.A. And
no, it was definitely something else.
It was something else.
You
and,
should open the lines up later on for
be assured,
people that have seen the...
Be assured. I will.
Seen the deal.
I will. Thank you very much for the call. All right, Bryce. It has been really a pleasure to have you on the air. And I guess at some point what we want to do as Dark Skies develops is have you back.
Well, I've enjoyed it immensely. And I think one of the things that our show wants to do is maintain our contact with the people who watch the show, because, you know, it's true that Brent and I got to create it, but now it's not our show. It belongs to the people who are going to watch it.
Along those lines, Bryce, when the website gets up, will there be a place where people who are fans can come and give you ideas and feedback and whatever?
I'm big on feedback. The only thing I'm a little suspicious of is story ideas, because it's a very litigious society out there, and
they
have to walk carefully there. But we want the feedback, and we want to be responsive to it.
Okay, so there will be something like that.
Well, I think you can already post, you can leave postings on the NBC website, and I check in on that one and read it. And I'll be checking in on all the things. And, of course, you can email us or just plain write to us. So there's lots of ways. Feedback is not a problem in this day and age.
Bryce, my friend, thank you very
much.
Thank
you.
You have a good night.
Thanks, Art. Good night.
Get some sleep. Bryce Abel from Dark Skies. Our skies have been rather bright. Something came down.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Now, come on, what was I supposed to do? He was out of town, and his two friends were so...
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from October 3rd, 1996.
Yes, we're going to open the alien line. Only if you are an alien should you call our alien line. Everybody else, lay off. Exclusively and aliens only, on the off chance that somebody has come down on the back of a green fireball. If you are but a mere earthling, don't bother calling that number. So this hour, aliens only at that number. It should be interesting. Here we go. The first attempt. On our alien line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Really?
Yes.
You really must be from another planet.
Yes, we're a little bit further away. We're over on the Asian continent as well. I'd like to thank you very much, Art, because you've been one of our finest assistants in preparing the population for our coming. You can call me Sasha.
Say that name again.
Sasha.
Uh-huh. And where are you actually from?
Actually, we're about 17.5 light years away. We won't give you the names of things because they'll mean nothing, because you're going to come up with your own technological names as you go about.
I'm sure that's true.
Being guided here.
Mm-hmm. And what is your purpose on our planet? I mean, why are you here?
We have returned to explain your existence to you. We realize that most of you are starting to come to the understanding that you're not indigenous to this planet and that this was a colony.
That's true.
And throughout your history, your writings have talked about what you call angels or angelos. And
yes.
We would like you to know that we have been with you and you have not been alone, but we've come to bridge the gap between your development as a spiritual being and be able to bridge the dimensional jump that you're going to have to do in the next couple years.
Well, you've got a hell of a job on your hands.
Well, we feel like you've come along physically quite well. Technologically, you are more advanced than you're able to handle. So
we've
our job is going to be to help you mentally unblock, to open your eyes to the evidence of the universe that has been blocked from you. We will now no longer be invisible. We will be with you. And
will we be able to tell you from anybody else on the street?
We will approach each person based on what we have guided that person along their own life.
Well, all right, but again, if I were to see you...
I will approach you. You will know me because I will tell you who I am. but no one will know us unless we make ourselves known.
Otherwise, you would be indistinguishable from human beings.
Yes, we're going to take the form.
That's very worse.
Because it's necessary in this gravity. Otherwise, we would not be able to be healthy ourselves.
I see.
One of the things about tonight's landing, there were six landings tonight.
Six?
Six, yes. The one in the west was seen. The one in the Pacific was seen because of the setting of the sun, the timetable of your moons and sun. And one of the things we'd like you to be aware of is that we will be gathering on October 9th at High Ground at 8 o'clock. Those who have already known that they know things are to come to High Ground nearest their home, the highest possible ground.
On October 9th. All right. Well, thank you very much. Now, see, I think that that alien picked up on something said on yesterday's program. I can't be sure about that. Remember the lady who called yesterday and said that there was going to be water, there would be water problems along the West Coast on October 9th? And now we get this from this alien on High Ground, October 9th. Just a little bit suspicious. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, this is Jamie from Montgomery, Alabama.
How you doing?
Just fine. I got two questions for you.
All right.
One is I've been a listener to, for you about 3 months now, and here recently it stopped going, staying for the 5 hours. It just started going off at the four-hour mark.
Well, maybe they have started a morning show there in Montgomery. I mean, what comes on?
A doctor show. I really don't listen to him.
A doctor show?
Yeah. I don't pay attention. When he comes on, I turn the radio off.
I see. Well, I guess if you had something medically disturbing, you might listen.
Yeah, maybe. Well, my other thing is, I was listening to news right after you went into the last break.
Yes.
And they're still claiming that you can only see that flash of light in the lower California area.
Well, they're obviously wrong, aren't they?
I guess so. People are saying that it was coming straight down, and obviously it flew halfway across the United States.
Obviously. Thank you.
All right.
Take care. Yeah, obviously they were wrong. Simple as that. Obviously, many of you have seen it all the way to the state of Alaska. That is possible. Now, I guess we ought to bear in mind what the alien said a few moments ago. Six separate landings. On my alien line, you are on the air. Hello.
Yes, you are Lebtra.
I am what?
Lebtra.
No, I'm Art.
Art? Oh, I'm getting it backwards. I'm sorry. Leb.
Oh, I think I get it. Yes, I see.
Art
reverse,
Bell.
Huh? Uh-huh. Lebtra,
now,
we've
contacted your show because they're not talking about it on any of your major media. You have set off a beacon.
We have set off a beacon? You mean like an obelisk?
Yes, in what you call Egypt.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes, at Giza.
Now, I am only ambassador, but they want me to ask you what you know is there. We have put it there so ancient times, we are not sure now either.
You've forgotten what you put there?
But the beacon has been set.
That happens to me with my TV remote control. I forget where I put it. Sometimes it's in the couch.
And there is Hancock and Bouval.
Bouval. You know them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They know of what?
Will there be danger when the chamber of the Sphinx is opened? Will there be danger for those who are there?
Yes, there is danger.
Will they turn into dust and drop to the Egyptian floor?
It will be beams. They will not drop to dust. It will be what in the traditions of your ancient of looking back and turning into salt.
Oh, the old turning into salt thing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be standing back. What planet are you from?
The planet, it is not a planet. It is the gaseous outlet. It is what you have seen with your, what you call the Hubble.
Are we talking about digestive troubles here? Or, oh no, I see, you mean the gaseous formation of new stars that Hubble is
in? In the sense, yes, we are energy.
All right. Energy beings. All right. Well, I appreciate that. No specific planet, but from an area of gas. And if there's stars birthing there, it would have to be hot gas, wouldn't it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello. You've lived on the other side of this planet, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Yeah. Did you ever see the green flash?
Do you know what it is?
At sundown,
I do know what it is, and no, I have never seen it.
Okay. I wonder if that factors in, but for people who haven't heard about it, it's when the sun slips down over the rim where the ocean meets the sky.
That's right.
The human eye will perceive a green flash.
That sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
Not always.
And so I'm wondering about this color. Okay, I'll let you go.
Let me tell you, on the last cruise, we were talking about that. I was talking about that with Bob Crane.
Okay.
And I sat out there with a camera
mm-hmm.
and my finger right on the button waiting for that flash that you're talking about
at the
out in the middle of the Baltic.
Mm-hmm.
And I never did see it, but I sure looked.
Okay, and because I'm just wondering if that figures in here because people are saying green.
Well, I don't think so. I understand what it is you're saying, and I think they are a different phenomena.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, there is said to be a green flash just as the sun reaches the horizon, when the last little blip of sun pops down below the level of the ocean. There is a green flash, and so that lady is right. I have never seen it, though I have looked. On my alien line, you are on the air. Hello?
Hello, this is Mike from the Big Island of Hawaii.
Are you an alien, Mike?
No, but I saw a...
Mike?
I saw a green fireball.
This is
an... Exactly
Mike. This is my alien line. You're violating the integrity of my alien line.
Oh, I couldn't get through any other way.
Well, you're not through now. Goodbye. I don't care what you saw. That is an alien line this hour. Only an alien line. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Oh, I better get on a real phone here.
This is
calling in from the U District, Art.
Yes, Dan, it would be.
Yeah, golly, it's getting mighty hard to get in to your show. There's a lot
of people out there, Dan.
There must be a lot of people out there. Oh, I got to tell you, man, September was one of the most incredible single months for guests that I can ever remember of the many years I've listened.
Well, good.
It's just a knockout. And well, there's too many things to get caught up on, and I can't find my list. So, the guest tonight, did he say anything about whether anybody actually believes in the link with the Kennedy thing and UFOs or anything?
No.
Yeah, so it was just...
No, he said, look, we're producing an entertainment program. Take it at that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I thought they did a real good job on it. It's one of the few UFO shows I've actually enjoyed.
Well, it is very entertaining. I mean, there's no question about it. Now, if you want to sit there and be a ufologist and a real stickler for every point, you're going to be angry.
Yeah.
I didn't approach it that way. I just sat down and thought it was going to be an entertainment show, and that's what it was.
Yeah, it was. And I thought that the acting was better than what you usually see on UFO shows.
I quite agree.
Yeah, it was very good. Art, your shows are just incredible. I've sent copies of some of your interviews off to different people, and in fact, I sent the one with Richard
Hoagland.
No,
Richard.
Let me find it here.
Well, anyway, you sent them to somebody.
Well, yeah, Richard Boylan.
Oh, okay.
Sent it to a few people.
Very good,
including Michael Lindemann. So keep up the good work. Your shows continue to knock me out.
Thank you, Dan. Right on the chin, huh? Alien Line, you are on the air. Hello.
Unan, Unan. Greetings, Earthling.
Are you an alien?
Yes, sir.
I guess any conversation that begins that way has got to mean you're an alien. Where are you from?
I am from another galaxy.
Why are you here?
I can't tell you where I'm from because Lasha's here. She's
all right.
A good angel.
Well, all right, fine. All right, I don't care then where you're from. Why are you here?
I'm here for the quickening. To quicken your quickening.
To quicken our quickening. Well, we don't need you for that.
Ah.
We're doing quite well on our own in that category.
Well, I seen on your Earth vision today, but the girl with the glass in her eyes,
Oh, Earth Vision. You mean
well,
TV?
From, we do that all the time.
Yeah, well, maybe. Reject. That's an alien trying to comment on a CNN story. No good. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
I enjoyed hearing Bryce earlier this evening.
It was very interesting, wasn't it?
You know, believe it or not, I haven't seen that show yet. And I wanted to ask you if you knew what time it comes on.
Well, I think the premiere ran at 8 o'clock. So 8 o'clock, I think, is the time, Saturday nights.
So on Saturday evening, that's what I thought.
Yeah, but
I
the next two Saturdays, it will not be on because of crummy baseball.
Oh, okay. So I'll look forward to that.
Unless the umpires go out on strike Friday, which is the great hope.
Yeah. Well, I'm calling from St. Louis, so actually, the way things are going for us, I hope that doesn't happen. We're contenders right now. By the way, I wanted to say that my comment this evening that the extraterrestrial, I think that humanity has a destiny in the stars in the future. But I don't think that, I think the first that we have to definitely get our act together here on Earth.
Wouldn't it be sad if with so much up there, and I live here in the desert, somebody said you can almost see the Milky Way. I see the entire Milky Way from one side of the sky to the other.
Uh-huh.
That's how bright it is. And to have all those gazillions of stars up there with gazillions of planets going around them,
uh-huh,
and to be limited here on the third rock from the sun would be very sad. So someday, if not in my lifetime, I surely hope human beings do go to the stars.
Well, I think we will. I think my Christian faith leads me to believe that that's exactly why God has done what he's done for humanity, to show humanity the right way. I think part of the reason that our technology is limited right now and that we haven't yet actually gone beyond is because we have things that we have to straighten out here on Earth first.
And well, we've got lots of that, don't we?
And I know that we will.
All right, so, my friend, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. On my alien line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm not an alien, but Art Bell...
Well, if you're not an alien, then you're out of here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Call the wild card lines, area 702-727-1295.
East to the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello,
yeah.
There.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you. Where are you?
Oh, I'm traveling through Texas in a big truck.
Through Texas in a big truck. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, I wouldn't expect anything else to be traveling through Texas. Everything else is big.
Oh, yeah. My name is Art also.
Okay.
And I had a question. I've been trying to call you for about a month. My question is, you know, I don't hear anything about Giant Rock, California anymore.
About what?
Giant Rock, California, which used to be at one time was the UFO capital of the world.
It was?
Yeah. Yes,
I've never even heard of it.
Oh, you haven't?
Giant Rock, California.
Yeah, it's out by Yucca Valley.
Really?
Yes. And there was a guy out there many years ago. I remember seeing it when I was a little kid on TV, and I believe Walter Cronkite ran an article on it. There was a guy that built this thing. I believe it was called an Integratron or something.
Oh, the Integratron is still there, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, that's Giant Rock.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But anyway, like I say, I just I hadn't heard anything about Giant Rock, California, and everybody's calling in talking about other places being, you know, UFO capitals of the world.
Well, if you had said Integratron, I would have known what you were talking about.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, I think it's Giant Rock. I'm not even sure if it's listed as a community. I used to go out there running around on motorcycles quite a bit and look the area over and stuff. But anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
All right, take care of there in your big truck in Texas. On my alien line, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Are you an alien?
Yes.
Good. Where are you from? Can you tell us?
I am from Mars.
Mars. Tell me, we've all been wondering. It must be you have your radio on. I'm going to have to leave the line if you leave your radio on, whether you're from Mars or not. Do you have your radio down now?
It's off.
It's off. That's good. Aliens are just like humans. They've got to turn the radios down when
yeah,
they get on the
alien, air. Alien radios.
Alien radios.
That's what it is.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. We don't see evidence of anybody living on Mars, so we can only presume that you live below the surface there on Mars.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Definitely?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Why are you
below the surface.
Why are you here?
I am here to straighten out things on Earth.
To straighten out things here on Earth. Well, you've got a big job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What, do you care to tell us your alien name?
It's Purvis, but you can call me God.
Purvis?
Yes.
But we can call you God?
Yeah.
The clear implication there is that that you are our creator?
Oh, yes.
Somehow you just don't have the voice of a creator, Purvis. Purvis the creator. All right, Purvis, you're out of here. And so am I. For this half hour. Oh, man. Maybe we shouldn't go to the stars. We'll be right back.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
This is from my friend Sean and Phil at KOH Reno. In addition to the wire stories that we've been sending regarding the mystery flash, we've received numerous calls from listeners who witnessed the event. Dave and Reno, driving home from Chico, saw a big flash in the sky, noted the light had a tail, assumed the object landed in the area of Table Mountain in Butte County. Another caller driving through Hunter County saw a huge green flash in the night sky, an explosion, said it broke in two. He called shortly after the story broke on the wire and was so rattled by what he had seen, he couldn't specify what time it had happened. Then there's Bryn in San Francisco. Art, so there was a bright thing that came from the sky. Then another caller reports another bright thing. Oh dear. Two words, Art. Without warning. And in honor of the object that has come in, whatever it is, we have the alien line open, a rare event here on this program. But once again, with some trepidation, we go to it. The alien line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
You're an alien.
Yes.
Why are you here?
Well, I'm here to write my philosophies about Earth and leave.
In other words, you're going to write about us?
About
your observations of us?
Yes, I'm only half Earther. Half my spirit comes from another planet. I broke into the heavenly archives of my planet and fell asleep with a book of Earth on my chest under a tree.
Really?
And I ended up here in the body of this guy.
How many books have you written?
Over 250.
So in other words, you're a money-grubbing alien.
No, I want to. I just want to make my books, make my books known, and get off the planet. I'm not interested in a lot of money.
So you take no compensation for your books?
No. I've been copywriting my books for 20 years. I put all money into it, and I've never got a cent from it. They're all copyrighted. They're for the people after I pass away of this planet.
After you pass away?
After I pass away. I don't know how to get back to my planet. So I pick Christianity. I'm going to give back my Christianity after I die.
Oh, you mean you'll make a dimensional hop when this tired old alien body of yours dries up?
Yes. Yes, sir. When my people on my planet found me asleep under a tree with the book Earth, they had to immediately close the gap of the planet, or it would be infiltrated by all kinds of Earthers and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is I have to get back there myself, and I don't know how. Really,
you know, the term Earther sounds a little derogatory. You don't mean that in a derogatory way.
I'm half an Earther. Half human. See, my physical body is human, but my spiritual body is a spirit from my planet. and I can't remember a lot of things on my planet.
Well, I think I feel a little insulted by the term Earther.
Well, okay, what do you want me to call you?
Well, I'll give that some thought, but I just think Earther is not politically correct.
Okay, how about half human?
Half human. That sort of sounds insulting, too.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Bell. That's a fact. I don't know how to get back to my planet. I'm stuck here until I die. I don't want to get rich.
Well, there's lots of ways to fly. If you've written that many books, you must be on your way. Well, there we have an alien who writes books and takes no compensation for it. I wonder if he's self-published. On my alien line, you're on the air.
Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Hello, it's a very honor and a pleasure to speak to you.
It's a very honor and pleasure to speak to you, too.
I must start by saying that it's very important for all your listeners and the world in general to understand that we come in peace. And it is also my concern in our elders, or you may say, your rulers or your government.
Now, how do we know that you come in peace?
Well, for many years now, we've been sending messages to you in encrypted messages in configurations of many mathematical circles. And for now 8 years now, your government has known and has decrypted these messages.
Why just the government? You know, look, I've always wanted to ask about this. You're talking, obviously, about crop circles.
You may say
and
that.
The fractal nature of crop circles. Well, fine. Why not make it more plain? I mean, can't you guys lay out a little English in some of these fields?
The answers are they're within the pyramids, you know, in Giza. And it's very, very distressful to us because many years now, your government has not been notifying the public of these very important. And in fact, right now I'm receiving a message and I must relay it to you.
Go right ahead.
To the planet Earth.
Yes.
And this is what our message has been saying over and over again. You just have not been aware of it.
Okay.
After receiving our message, you know now that you're not alone. We've been observing you for over 20,000 years before the death of your known savior. From the day on, and without your knowledge, we've been over time providing defense to your world. After the invasion of Jogon, which ended all but two young life forms on your sister planet Mars. 1,300 years ago, after their rebuilding of their Jogon Empire, NASA's invasions of 13 sectors have ended in destructing to less advanced civilizations. 76 planets, which make up the United Planets to the Federation, is spread too thin among the stars. Your planet has proved to be advancing rapidly in knowledge and wise creativity. We now call upon you to turn your attentions and resources to space technology.
Are we now ready to join the Federation?
I'm sorry, but this may come in time. Let me finish. The day may come for which you will be needed. We do feel interfering in your advancement would limit your own creativity to build your own and to provide.
Okay, we're talking the prime directive here, right?
Right, and we feel interfering would really limit your creativity to build your own unique systems and intergalactic warships that would provide and leap our enemy.
Did you say warships?
Yes.
All right, well, see, that's where you leave me cold. You're an alien, you're talking about warships. Warships, of all things. Would anybody from a galactic federation use the phrase warships? I don't think so. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Nisa, awake in Las Vegas.
Well, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I got a green light story for you, but it's a 20-year-old one.
20-year-old one?
Mm-hmm. When I've given you those stories about the Integraton, I just faxed you that area is called Landers.
Yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, we just, as you know, mentioned that, so
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that got you going.
Right. Well, I've got some updated information in that personal video that I'm going to send you with a bunch of other kind of mind blowing stuff. But anyway,
I can barely hear you, dear.
Oh,
you got a
I'm
very
sorry.
Quick,
oh, see, it must be this phone.
The phone is fine. It's just that you got to talk. Your chin doesn't talk. Your mouth talks.
Oh, okay. Is that better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay. Anyway, this green flash story was out in that area. I used to live in Yucca Valley, and one night I just looked out my window, and it lit up the sky from where the base is out there at 29 Palms all the way down the hill, which would be probably to Banning, you know, way down. It just lit up the sky, like what you're talking about, but I didn't see any fireball. It was just this huge, like, daylight.
Mm.
And this was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I don't.
Well, maybe they've been coming down for 20 years.
Well, maybe they have, and you know, they have. They did war games out at the base, so I thought, well, what the heck? Maybe it's something out there, but it wasn't. And so maybe this has just been happening all along, and people weren't awake to see it, or they didn't report it. I don't know, but I think it's the same thing.
Well, it may be, and slowly they may be taking us over, like in dark skies. Each time one lands, more people fall victim. Well, I don't know if victim is the right word. They become...
First-time callers call area 702-727-1222.
No. Digestive problems on that line. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Al from California.
How you doing?
Oh, you know what? Last week you had a guy named Ed, and he called up, and he wanted to know whether sleep paralysis had anything to do with UFOs.
Hmm.
Well, I'd like to answer his question, if I can.
What's the answer?
The answer is yes, it has a lot to do with it. Because when extraterrestrials come and visit you,
yes,
they put you to sleep. Not only you, but your whole family. That way, when they take you in astral body, nobody will know, only yourself. See, I am a contactee.
You are?
Yes, I am.
So you're not an alien, you're just an abductee.
I'm just an abductee. The reason they're here is, well, for me, they want me to preach peace, love, and harmony. The ones that I have seen, I've only seen human-looking extraterrestrials. I have never seen any grays. I've seen...
Then how do you know you're really seeing aliens?
Well, they tell me they're from Pleiades. And they're from the city, from S-Complex.
Well, you
and
should...
I have had about 14 or 15 meetings with
them. With them? Well, you should have them call me when I have the alien line open. On the alien line, you're on the air. Oh, I could do that. Who needs an alien to do that? East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Hello.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. That means turn your radio off.
Right. Say, I was wondering, let's see, I've come across some pretty startling information as far as alien encounters and, you know, their part in our history and who they actually are.
And where did you get the startling information?
From them.
Them? So you talk to... Them?
Alien cultures.
You talk to them?
Yes.
Frequently?
Quite frequently.
And in what form do they give you this information?
In the form of mind implants.
So you have implants in your mind?
Implants of knowledge and information.
Oh, I see. You don't have an actual physical device.
No. But... tell you what I have done. I have deciphered the book of Ezekiel and the Holy Bible and the Revelation.
Well, there's a lot of people that have done that.
I mean, this breaks it down to child's play.
Child's play?
Yes. And I've showed this to not only Christian people, but the atheist people without Christian backgrounds.
Don't they object to that? I mean, regarded as preaching?
Truth is truth. And if the truth can be seen quite simply, if it can't be anything else, then it must be truth.
Well, it's rather subjective on this planet, sir. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art. This is Kevin calling from Chico, California.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good. Hey, listen, when I was a dispatcher here with the city of Chico, we had a report one evening where a lady thought that a plane had gone down. And right here in Butte County, and during my time in the Air Force, I was stationed at Vandenberg for about a year and a half, and it was not unusual to have reports from several hundred miles away that after a missile launch had gone off.
That's right. Well, this was not a missile, and it was coming down, sir, not going up. We'll be right back. To our alien line. You're on the air. Hello.
Greetings, Earther.
Greetings.
I am Zanak.
Zanak?
I am Third Lord of Korfor, Ultimate Fububub of Wahamda, and Lord of Starfleet 179. It is I, yes, it is I, Mighty Zanak, who have ordered one of our shuttle ships to enter your lowly planet earlier this evening. That thing that you say you saw? That was our shuttle ship going down to your planet. You see, we are from the Pleiadian system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is Fake Meister Gearhart.
We are from the Pleiadian...
You see how good I am with voices, Fake Meister?
And we come to get good green bud every harvest season.
Yeah, right. Goodbye, Fake Meister. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello. No, you're not. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. I just got home from work and I wanted to call you. Can I change the subject a second?
Always. Open lines.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Chuck Shepard, the syndicated columnist?
No.
Okay. He writes out of St. Petersburg, Florida.
And what does he write about?
He writes about News of the Weird. It's a weekly column.
So he does on paper what I do on radio.
I think he'd be a great guest. I have.
Yeah,
something.
He might be. Why don't you send me a way to get hold of him, and I will do that.
Can I just read you one little blurb from his column this week?
What, no, I'd prefer you don't. Just give us a synopsis.
Okay, the synopsis is that a man wrote a letter on the stationery of his employer and said that he had information on the alleged federal government complicity in the crash of the TWA flight and the Challenger flight. And that as a result of that, he's been getting death threats. So we had to get a killer parrot to guard his home. No kidding.
Well, that's even weirder than stuff I do.
I mean, it was a green one.
Yeah, it probably was. Green killer parrot. All right, thank you. How does he do with that sort of writing? Syndicated? Really? A green killer parrot. Well, Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, I'm happy that I got through.
I'm happy you got through, too. Turn your radio off.
It's off. Thank you. How are you?
I am fine.
Terrific show for this hour of the morning. I don't know how you do it, but in any event, I wanted to mention something to you, if I might. I've been trying to get in to talk to you. Are you familiar with let me put it this way. Are you familiar with or have you ever read the book, The Hollow Earth?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I have never heard you mention it.
We've talked about it many times.
Well, of course, I don't get every show.
We know they are down there.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, why don't they come up?
Well, I had a theory or a thought about it. Let's assume that they really do exist.
All right.
I think that
for the sake of the conversation, at
yes,
least. Yes,
because it is still it hasn't been totally proven.
Slightly controversial.
Right, but recently there has been. Okay, take the recent discovery of the Mars rock.
Yes.
It was found in the Antarctic. Okay?
That's correct, yes.
It was proven to be from Mars because of the mass of impact fragments from Mars. In other words, that wasn't the only rock that was found.
No, that is not how they proved it was from Mars. They proved it was from Mars because of the chemical composition as compared to samples that they had from Mars during our... earlier missions.
You're correct. Pardon me for that. In any event, it's reasonable to believe that the rocks are from Mars.
Yes.
I have to think that if we wanted to believe that these beings exist below the Antarctic, as Bernard described it, there's a tunnel of some sorts that goes from the pole to, you know, below the crust, I suppose.
Yes, but again, why have they not come up?
Well, they may possibly have a density, a body density that is unlike ours. I remember a story in...
In other words, they cannot handle the surface gravity.
Well, there could be one of two ways. If they had a density beyond, let's say, the heaviest metal in our mineral table is, one of the precious metals, gold or platinum. They're extremely heavy.
They're heavy,
right?
Yes.
Their density is the greatest,
right,
of any of the minerals.
Right.
If these beings were of a composition that was non...
We'll call them tight bodies.
What bodies?
Tight bodies.
Okay.
Yes.
That they had a density that was so great...
Yes.
...that in any area known to us on the surface of the Earth, they would not be able... The Earth wouldn't hold them up. If there was a weight per cubic centimeter so great...
Well, that certainly... All right, sir. I appreciate your call. That explains why they would not come up. It would be very uncomfortable for them up here. Very uncomfortable indeed. So they stay down there in the area they know best in their little tight body world. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
It's sunny up in British Columbia.
Yes, sunny.
I talked to the fellow on Mirror just a few minutes ago at the last pass.
Oh, you did? Baja. You did?
Yeah, and I asked him if he's seen anything there around, I think it would be around 400 hours UTC.
Right.
And he had mentioned that he wasn't looking at that particular time.
That's
too bad. But he'll keep
bad.
His eye open now.
Well, I'm afraid it's a little late at this moment. It's already
happening. But no, he's going to look for future things.
You must be a ham operator.
Right.
Well, a lot of people don't know the hams can talk to those revolving about in Mir. And you can do that on nearly every pass when they're attentive to their radios, anyway. And that's a lot of fun to do. All right, well, listen, you are going to get the honors from Canada tonight. Do you know what the honors are?
Good morning, America, and I guess Canada, too, and the world now.
Well, I guess Canada and the world now, too, yes. Thank you very much, and good night, sir.
Good night, Tim.
And to all of you, remember tomorrow night, we're going to do the reverse speech thing about midnight Pacific time. So, Canada, America, good night.